Everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 86 for the 29th of May, 2010. I am David McVeigh, your venerable host who is here every week. Every week. Oh my God, it's been a long road. Okay, so now before we introduce anybody, I've just got a quick announcement to make. Now, we've mentioned this a couple of times. We are fast approaching our 100th episode. Now, on our 100th episode, we are going to play some of the highlights from past episodes. I've already put up in our forum, which you can find at geekactually.com/forum. There's also a link on the front page. We've put up a topic for your requests. So if you've got favorite moments throughout the last 2 years that you think we should play, put your recommendations in there and we will endeavor to hunt those out. Also, we are actually going to change the theme to the show. After 2 years, we're going to change the theme to the show. On the 100th episode, we want to put a new theme. Now, we want to keep it in the same vibe, in the same jive, because it is. We've been using this theme for a long time. Now, this theme was only ever meant to be temporary. And for some reason,
that's a hell of a temporary file.
I know, it just stayed. It was actually something I was just knocking around on GarageBand with. And when we put the first show out, I said, well, you know, what the hell, we'll just use this for the episode. We'll come up with something better as we go, and we've been stuck with it ever since. Now, I want to keep the basic idea of it because it is kind of like a signature of our show now, but I'd like to remix it basically with some drums and some guitar and really kind of jazz it up a little bit. Really, really, you know, funkify.
A mashup with the Doctor Who thing.
Well, yeah.
There you go. So, why I bring this up is if you are a musician or you like to think of yourself as a musician, we are opening it up for the next 3 weeks to accept submissions. The thing should be no longer than
Dave,
that.
Dave, I've got a much easier option for you. All you need to do is just put the file on YouTube and wait, and someone will remix it. Everyone is obsessed with remixing.
That is true. Okay, well, before we go any further, because now we're getting voices coming in, before we go any further, I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Oh, I'm good. I've slept. Sort of, so I'm awake for the show.
Oh,
I like to give people an update on exactly what they're going to get out of me, depending on the week.
I got to warn you, I'm feeling really good today, and I got some rage on, so we're going to...
Wonderful.
We're heading into some interesting territory today, yep. So... Shane Gregory, how are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. I'm happy to not be working on a weekend.
Yay! That's always good, although one would say that you are working on a weekend. Anyway...
This isn't work, Dave. We all love it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to know. And we are rejoined again after, what, 4 weeks?
I think four weeks.
Ben O'Brien. How are you, Ben?
I am super duper and just a little tired.
Yeah, now I'm going to keep signaling to Ben to get closer to the microphone.
Yeah,
he has a tendency of...
I'll sound like Barry White by the end of this.
He has a tendency
like
of
the sexy
sliding
of a cool
back
lady
in
snake.
His seat and going way back like this. Anyway, we got to keep it close. Got to keep it close, keep it intimate.
It's just a relaxed vibe, you know? I feel like I should be on a Shay Long with a cigar and a sniffer of brandy.
That would be a good idea for the 100th show, wouldn't
it?
All right, so back to this music situation. If you are a musician and you would like to have a crack at this, I would love to hear from you. Send an MP3 of your music to feedback@geekactually.com. We're only going to do this for 3 weeks because we are preparing that 100th show. So we have to also then go through submissions and pick the one that we think is best. But if you do submit, we will play all submissions on the show. All right, so we'll play all submissions on the show. And
that
we'll
sounds
see
like incentive to have some joke attempts right there.
So everybody get cracking. We need a new theme. And the person I would actually really like to just make a quick shout out to is Stubby, if you are listening, because Stubby was the one who wrote the theme for Geek Actually Tech, and I'd love to hear what he's got to do for it. So
I will hit him
got
up
to
about
do
it.
For it? What? My noun center is gone. I'd love to hear what he does. So please, everybody out there, we need a new theme. Okay. Now, all that being said, let's get on with this show. What do you think? All right. Why are we here? We're here to do the Geek Actually podcast. It's kind of, we wrap it up as our week in geek. A lot of the stories that are on the show have come from our website. Other shows are from various things that have come up on the net that we find. We kind of tear it apart, look at it, and get our rage on about it. We do a little bit of tech, and we do a little bit of entertainment news. In tech today, we're going to talk about the Facebook changes to privacy, and the iPad is released. So the iPad, the iPad is now out, and it occurred to me like a bolt of lightning today. God, you know, it's one of those situations where you sit there and go, why didn't I think of this sooner? And I guess at the back of my mind I had, but I had the cynical marketing from Apple on this particular product.
It's just a big iPhone?
No. Not about the product itself. I think the product is awesome. But we'll come back to why I think it's very cynical. In entertainment, we're going to talk about Ridley Scott going 3D crazy, quite literally. And, of course, we're all going to get our comic book guy on. Oh, today, yeah. Because we got a lot of comic book news.
Most definitely.
I'm sorry, sir. And then, of course, later we've got our feature review. This week we're going to do the video game adaptation of The Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, which we all had a chance to see this week. Mm. And we will let you know what we thought. Let's get on with this. First of all, tech. And first of all, Facebook. Now, anybody who has been listening to this show long enough or follows us on Facebook and so forth knows that I'm about to jump off the ledge. All right, I'm about to leap away from Facebook. And basically, I've already declared that on the 31st, I'm closing, deleting, getting rid of completely my Facebook account. Mm. Goddamn Facebook this week turned around and went, we're sorry.
It's all because of you, Dave.
No, it's all because of Leo Laporte.
To the show.
I think Leo Laporte and Jason Calacanis being very high profile in this world. Leo's already deleted his Facebook account and Jason's following. I think the fact that these high profile people are jumping ship has made them turn around.
I'm sure Stephen Conroy's been taking some of the credit for that as well.
Oh, I'm sure he's taking the credit. Yeah. He has anything to do with it.
No, not at all.
No. So anyway, so I have a picture of the infamous man himself here. Here he is. Dweeb. All right. This is Mark Zuckerberg.
The geek shall inherit the earth.
Oh, man, he already has. All right, so we all know that Facebook had some issues. All right, mm-hmm. Facebook keeps reinventing their privacy policy. Mm-hmm. At one point, they finally got their privacy change to, I think it's 150, I think, was the last tally of things that you could click to set your privacy settings. They made it so complicated that nobody knew what they were doing, and it defaulted to completely open. So anybody who had a Facebook account, even if you had locked your privacy off, when the new changes came in, everything just opened up, right? You had to go in and opt out of everything rather than opt in. On top of this, last week we also reported that Zuckerberg had an old text conversation that come up with him, and it showed complete disdain for users. And just everything I've read about this man, he's not a nice person. He doesn't come across. I don't know
how
him
ironic
personally.
That he's created one of the largest social networking.
Yeah, I know, and he says everybody should be out there, and you know everybody wants to share. He actually said everybody wants to share everything out there, and yet when his private photos came out,
his parents didn't. Put boundaries down when he was a kid. I think that's
no. That's brilliant. Now, when, of course, his private photos and stuff came up, it was like, oh, you weren't supposed to be seeing any of that sort of stuff. You know, it's like, yeah, privacy for everyone else and not for him. All right, so this week, Zuckerberg hit the stage. They did a big, like, keynote-type presentation where they basically said, we were wrong. We were wrong, and we're going to we're redoing the privacy. Now they're rolling it out. It may not have hit you yet, but some people it's already hit. They've reduced the number of clicks in the privacy options from like the 150 down to like 10 or something like that. It's something ridiculous. Mm. They've simplified the whole system down, and they've made some really new, interesting features. Things like you can now opt out of applications. So if you just want to use it as a social network with your friends, you can. You don't have to have all that other crap that goes into Facebook. The Farmvilles and the, you know, send kisses and gifts and all that other crap that's in there. You actually block all applications, right? Fantastic. Good move. Simplified security and the fact that he has come out and apologized. And his quote was our reaction – sorry, not his quote. Debbie Frost, who is the head of public affairs, said, our reaction today and the announcements are 100% based on public and privacy community feedback. Hmm. So they've listened and they've come out to fix it. Zuckerberg actually said his quote is he still – I still don't think he gets it.
No.
Because his quote was, users use the service because they love sharing information.
Oh, God. He was like the kid in high school that would just steal your pen and be like, thanks. Has no idea of personal space.
No, he has no concept of boundaries.
Cool.
No concept of boundaries. Anyway, so he said, bless you, Josh. He said, third-party applications and websites can be blocked. There's now an opt-out system. Options, reduced from 50 to 15. So they've gone from 50 different options that you can select now down to 15. Basically, now it's really easy. You can go in there and say, share with my friends only, period. You know, and it's done. All right. So now the question that comes out of all of this, because Zuckerberg has admitted they made a bunch of mistakes, and they all Debbie Frost also promises that the company would make fewer changes in the future, and all changes would now follow the same principles that they have now implemented. Question is it too little, too late? Do we still leave Facebook? May 31st is the protest date. People are supposed to be leaving Facebook. There is actually a group, and I think it's up to the several thousand now, people who are all saying they're leaving on the 31st of May. Should we, the disgruntled masses, basically still leave Facebook, or have they earned themselves a reprieve?
What are you asking me? Are you asking me personally what I think about your situation?
Yes.
Is that the thing? I think you should jump.
Oh, okay. Without a net, right?
just because I'm that way inclined. No. Look, dude, like I said, for me, I use it for an entirely different use. Like, I mean, for me, it's...
Well, you're in the same boat as me.
Yeah.
We use it as a way to promote what we're doing.
Well, partially...
Which it's pretty good for. Yeah. I mean, partially as far as promotion and stuff goes, like a lot of
and
stuff
also
I've
personal
done with shows
promotion
and things
well.
You wouldn't be able to do without Facebook.
Now, it's interesting you say that, though, because since this decision was made, we revamped the forum. We've been putting a lot more information up on the website. And I've been tweeting out to Twitter, our website hits in a day, looking at the statistics, have only taken about a 10% drop.
Yeah.
So really... Is it that big? And an indication of people aren't reading Facebook. I mean, let's face it. Facebook is incredibly narcissistic. It is all about what people want to say, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Here's my witty anecdote.
I don't know if people actually read very much of Facebook. Because when I put up the post, I have 245 personal followers. Forget the site. And a lot of these followers are family and people, friends who I've made recontact with. I put up a post saying, I am leaving. Put up the link to the article explaining why I was leaving. I put it the whole bit. Not one person answered it.
I commented.
No, you commented on the second one.
Well, I read the first one.
That's the point, is that I then put up a second one a few days later, and I got a couple of comments, and then every day I've been counting it down. I've been saying 3 days to go, you know, 5 days to go, whatever. 2 days ago, now this has been going on for a week, 2 days ago, two girls who I know from high school started to go, what's all this about? It's like, they didn't bother to actually read any of the stuff from beforehand. And all I could think is, Is it really that effective? Is anybody actually reading it?
Well,
yes,
I mean,
they have a lot of users, but you know, does that mean anybody's actually looking at it?
Well, I mean, for
it's
me,
never the people you actually intend to look at it for.
For me, I think it comes down to what you personally use it for. Like, I mean, as an example, we went to Industry Drinks on Wednesday, and we went out for the night, and I did browse through all the pictures from people's photos that they downloaded to Facebook to share it with everyone, and it was kind of a good laugh, and I get to see what, you know, other people's angles from the same event that I was at, and look at, you know, the incredible amount of drinks that we had, you know, like I got to see all that, and I enjoyed that, and there were comments backwards and forwards between people that were there laughing at how stupid X person looked or whatever it was, and that part of it I like, and the part of just having it as sort of a casual friend situation, so when I have people that I know that are in the industry, I can kind of drop a message out if I need to ask them a question about something, but not have to have it so personal that it's like I send them something, you know, it's just sort of a passing, fleeting comment or something I just stick up on their wall they may or may not see. All that sort of stuff I like it for, but for you, it's like, it's a bit less to do with that sort of thing. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's,
it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It makes you wonder whether or not it's really suited for what you want to use it for. So
I think as far as a promotional tool, usually, just from my experience, is that people either, like most people tend to have these days, a website and a Facebook page. But if you look at both, you'll see that one is undoubtedly more detailed than the other.
And
you
one
know,
really...
They'll put more effort into the Facebook, and then you see the website, and it's not really as up
or
to date.
Or vice versa, and what you'll find is the Facebook is just literally, like with mine, was quite literally just a place where I fed stories from the other website, because you want to bring the traffic back to your own site.
And I think if you have a website as detailed and sort of updated regularly as Geek, actually, it's probably... Facebook probably isn't as crucial as a promotional tool as it might have been. I mean, and you're still on Twitter anyway, aren't you?
We also have our own forum set up as well.
And Twitter is just like the promotional aspect of Facebook without any of the
bullshit.
In the middle crap, like applications and zombies versus mafioso and shit like that. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still thinking about stepping off that ledge. I've got until tomorrow. Tomorrow
it
evening.
Depends. I think what it depends on is how much you enjoy spying on other people's Facebook.
It is kind of fun looking at through other people's photographs.
And you get to do that thing that you always want to be able to do in life when you see two people on a bus, say, having a stupid conversation. In real life, you can't just drop in and say some smart-ass comment. Whereas if you comment on someone's status, it's like the online equivalent of that.
That's true. That's,
it's like the number of people I've just kept on my Facebook because I know that I'll be able to do that with their status.
So the question is, should I keep Facebook open, make my profile completely locked off to just friends,
yeah,
but then just focus on the fan page?
Yeah, I think do that. I mean, that's what we do with Studio 4 and our stuff.
Because quite literally, all I really
want is the
fan page.
You can still run all the pages and everything like that.
But you can't have the fan page without the personal site, so...
Yeah. No, I reckon that's
probably the best. Lock yourself down, but then just keep... I mean, the fan page is always going to be open.
Mm. Plus, every now and then, it doesn't hurt just to keep it open. It does give you that ability. Like, it is still nice every now and then if you have something that you've posted up. It is nice for me to be able to sit there and mock you or whatever it is by dropping a comment down below.
Mock me? Is that the way it works now?
Alternatively. You know me better than that, man. It's not like I ever say anything pleasant.
What you could do if you really want to jump off Facebook personally is keep the page open and just make like Josh an admin.
Mm.
And then you know, if there's any stories.
Oh, Josh has got his hands far too full at the moment.
I'm struggling to get him posts at the moment.
Josh is struggling with his own site, which we'll come back to later in our promotion section. But yeah, Josh has got his own site and his own Facebook to monitor. So yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to have a serious think about this. You, the listeners out there, this podcast will be up the same day as we record it. So you'll have a day. Anybody who does listen to this prior to the 31st, send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com. Tell me, all you have to type into the feedback is jump or stay.
No, okay. I've got an even better idea. Let's put this out to the Facebook people, right?
Yeah.
Just write a nice little message that basically says, in, you know, 2 days from now, I'm leaving Facebook for good. Talk me out of it. If no one responds, that's
jump.
Your cue. Yeah. That's your cue right there.
Absolutely.
I'm posting
it's like the online equivalent of a guy on a roof with a megaphone going, I'm going to jump, and everyone's just walking past ignoring
it. It's pretty much, that's exactly how I felt this week. All I felt was, I mean, I'll give you an idea. Here's the most staggering part of it all. Not one member of my family responded.
There's more love there than you think.
Yeah,
no, I'm sure there's
still don't understand how it works.
I'm sure there's lots of love. It's just all I can think is, if this is a communication tool to communicate with my family, they're not reading it. So it makes you wonder.
It's all about sharing, though, so they'll still come around to your house to borrow money. That's what Zuckerberg said.
All right, let's get away from Facebook. They irritate me. So, all right, now let's talk now. I got to be very clear. I don't want to make light of this story, okay? Josh and I have talked about this already. And it's a hard one because it's a really actually sad situation, and we're going to get serious about it as well. But some of the measures being taken are the funny thing.
There is a line that I'm going to draw in the sand right now and say, yes, I understand that it is tragic, and I really honestly believe that it is sad that it has to come to this.
But there's mental images going on
but
here.
The kind of imagery that you get out of this just makes you sit there and go, that's the best way you can deal with this situation. I'm laughing at what their response to the situation
not
is.
The situation.
As opposed to the situation.
That's right. So let's make this very clear. We're not mocking the situation. Okay, now let's fill you in. Foxconn in China, all right, which is one of the largest manufacturing companies in the world. The plant in question has 400,000 employees, all right? So this plant is a small city, all right? This plant produces electronic goods for Apple, Sony, Dell, Nokia, and Hewlett-Packard, amongst many others, all right? They produce a lot of high-level content for the United States and the rest of the world, and you can imagine how many iPads are being produced as an example, right? 1 million sold already in the States. These people are churning out stuff. Now, conditions at Foxconn, and I brought it up on the screen before, I'll bring it up one more time. This is just one of the mini Foxconn buildings. There was actually one that the building was like the size of a city. It was huge. Anyway, so this plant has been having some trouble. Apparently, over the last year, there's been 13 suicides or attempted suicides. 9 suicides, actual 13 with attempts. Because conditions at this factory are terrible, apparently. Mm. Okay, now, on Buzz Out Loud this morning, I was listening. Somebody wrote in saying they actually used to work at the Foxconn plant, and they were saying that there's no seats. They would work long hours. You weren't allowed to talk to anybody. If you actually leaned against the counter, you were chastised. Apparently, the managers were always over your shoulder. You know, just it's like go, 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 gruel, gruel, gruel. Okay? Since all this has come out, there has now been notification that Foxconn is actually saying they're going to give their workers a 20% pay increase. And basically to help
in
that
chair,
out,
maybe?
That's not, look, money is not always the situation. Mm. A happy worker is a more productive worker. And this is something that the Chinese in particular, and I don't mean to sound racist, but the Chinese factories have never really understood. It's all about productivity, get in there, force, force, force. If you make people happy, they're going to be more productive. All right. So there's a great story about a Brazilian factory where they literally gave over the factory to the workers. And it is more productive than any other factory in the world. The workers kind of run it. They self-manage themselves and the whole bit. And it's this fantastically run company, really profitable. It just shows you if you actually apply a little bit of brain power to this, you can actually make a really productive company. All right, so that's the backstory. It's a very tragic situation. However, somebody did point out in an article that I was reading the other day that 13 suicides over a year out of 400,000 employees is actually not a statistical anomaly. Mm. That is actually not that high a percentage. So let's make that clear as well. It's tragic, but it's not... It's kind of not unusual, really, in a high-stress situation. Yeah. But
I'm sure there's a higher percentage rate in, like, you know,
I think if you have a city with 400,000 people in it, you probably got a higher ratio of suicide.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people in one plant. I mean, it's a, you know, they've got 800,000, I think, employees worldwide, and like 400,000 are packed into one factory. It's a lot of people in a factory, all right? All right, now, what made Josh and I laugh about this was the measures that they decided to take on this, which is the mental images. Apparently, first thing that happened was, this is all apparent. We don't have proof of this stuff, all right? So we're just going with what we've been reading. But apparently Apple presented the workers at Foxconn with a contract saying they won't kill themselves. It's like, here, sign this. It's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
I'll sign it in my blood.
Apparently, no.
Don't even think about it now.
No, no, you signed a piece of paper. You signed it. Now, apparently, the legal contract is not just as simple as you won't kill yourself. Apparently, what the legal document is saying is that if you do kill yourself, your family is not going to get any benefits from it, and your family can't sue us. So it's a little bit more legalese than that, right? But the point is that a contract saying you're not going to kill yourself is stupid. But the one that really made us laugh, and this is the one, Josh, would you like to tell us on this one?
Sure, Dave. So in the situation where you have people jumping off your roof.
Several of the suicides came off the roof, apparently.
Yeah, so
it's a big building. You know.
Yeah, it's
a big building, so it's probably a very effective solution. And I would imagine as one person does it, that would be fuel that you would want to maintain that this wouldn't happen again.
I'm sure there's a few people just leaping onto the assembly line as well.
Apparently, what this company has done to circumvent this problem is around the building they have put out catch nets around the side of the building. This is not a joke. I'm not being funny.
Like a bullseye.
They have actually put out mats that you have to. I believe there's fences now on the roof as well, isn't there?
There could be.
Yeah. You have to get over this
and then jump. And you have to make sure that the jump is quite decent because if not, you're going to land.
Could you imagine the disappointment of the first person who leapt off the building and landed in the net and went, oh, or could you? And the reason why it's funny is, I mean, okay, there actually haven't been that many suicides, but the fact that they want to erect nets gives me this visual image in my head of some executive working in his office and bodies just falling
and bouncing back up on the roof.
People walking into the office, like passing people, bouncing past them on the trampoline.
I'm sorry, putting up nets is not the solution, guys. Fix the working conditions, you know, make the people happier, and they're not going to jump off the roof of the building, you know.
That's like you know, replacing all the guns with the flag that says bang.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's ludicrous. So all I can say is Foxconn, in all Chinese factories, Chinese and other third world factories, the ones that are in, you know, Sri Lanka and all, you know, all the other factories out there, stop slave driving make people enjoy their job and they will be productive workers for you. You know, you don't have to treat them like they're dirt. You know, it's ridiculous. People who are standing in an assembly line all day long, give them a stool. It doesn't cost that much. And if they're not on their feet the whole time, they're going to be a little bit happier. They're still going to be just as attentive. They're still going to do their job. They don't need to stand on their feet for 18 hours a day. You know, I worked in a factory. I got a job when I was 17 years old. I got a job in a factory. I thought, oh, that's cool. High rate of pay for my age. I thought, fantastic. One day. That's all I lasted. One day. I finished the day, and the next morning I called him and said, I ain't coming back. It was the most tedious, boring, horrible job I've ever worked in my life, and I've never worked in a factory since. And I admire anybody who can put up with that, you know? But at the same time, treat people humanely, okay? All right, let's move on here because our Facebook went a little bit long. The ISP filter, the internet censorship filter, has reared its head again. Apparently, Google is actually saying that the new recently announced Google TV, which is coming out in the States later this year, may not come out in Australia or may come out heavily delayed because apparently YouTube features heavily on the Google TV, and with the internet censorship filter wanting to basically approve and censor every single video coming through YouTube, Google is saying that the network degradation will be so high that it's not worth putting the Google TV onto the system. Because if you can't watch it properly, what's the point? So go Conroy and the internet censorship filter. We may have lost another piece of technology because of your fucked up ideas. All right, speaking of Conroy, actually, no, one last thing about Google TV very quickly. Apparently, if you are one of those sort of people who likes to skip ads, you like to record it, skip the ads, get through them, you do all that sort of stuff, can't do that on Google TV. Google TV actually doesn't have an ad-skipping feature, but as they say, there'll be less ads because there'll be targeted ads. Because it's internet advertising, they'll know what you like, they'll only be advertising what you want, and so there'll be less, but you can't skip them.
Yeah, it's still a problem.
It's a problem. Most people don't want to watch the ads. That's one of the reasons.
How is that going to work with the internet filter, with them monitoring each upload on YouTube? Does that mean if you upload a video, there'll be like a day delay before it gets actually put up or something?
I'm assuming. Google is actually not saying they're going to do that. And there's a very good chance that if Conroy tries to bring this in, Google will just say, screw you, and pull out. Because there is no way of doing it. It's ridiculous. But this is – they're actually saying that they want to scan – YouTube for restricted content or refuse classification content.
Doesn't YouTube already do that?
That's exactly their point. They say we already do that, and Conroy's filter is a joke, but Conroy's saying, oh, there's so much stuff on there that's horrible and you can't put that on there. And it's like, well,
all that child porn,
all that
on
child
YouTube.
Porn on YouTube. Show it to me, Conroy. I've never seen any child porn on YouTube.
He must be really good at finding child porn, Conroy.
Can
he
I just make on about it a lot. I'm going to make an observation because the next story is about the next story is about Stephen Conroy, and look, Josh, we're bringing back an old favorite. All
right. We're bringing back an old favorite.
This photo, though, really just summed up this story. We're going that Google thing actually segues nicely into the next story, which is where I get my rage on this week, because Stephen Conroy has outdone himself. Even the other senators are now saying, and quote, he is a petulant, hysterical child. All right? He got up in a Senate hearing this week and basically just jumped on Google, basically saying how they were responsible for the single biggest security breach in history and blah, blah, blah. Now, if you don't know the backstory, and I'm assuming most people do because people who listen to us probably listen to other podcasts, but Google on their Street View cars have inadvertently... and I'll explain a little bit what I think happened, but they haven't explained it 100%. But I think anybody who's got a good tech mind probably has a notion. Inadvertently, they have collected 600 gigabytes of data from unprotected Wi-Fi connections as the Google cars were driving, taking photographs. Now, somebody said, well, why would they be sniffing out those packets of information anyway? I don't think they were. I think what they were set up to do was pick up public hotspots. Because one of the things that is in phones right now is what's called assisted GPS. And assisted GPS is for people who don't actually have a GPS antenna, they can actually pinpoint your location by triangulating between hotspots.
Yeah.
So I think what these Google cars are doing is killing two birds with one stone. While they're driving around taking pictures, they're also sniffing out unprotected Wi-Fi, which is usually a hotspot. Anybody who has unprotected Wi-Fi in their house, I say shame on you. Yeah. Lock it off. All right.
I think ours is still – we just got an iNet Bob.
But you turn yours off when you're not home.
Oh, yeah, we turn it off.
Yeah, but while you're at home, all it takes is one checkbox, which says encrypt, you know? And if you encrypt it, they don't see you, Okay.
Well, I'll get you to show me how to do
that. encrypt it, add a password, and you're done. Yeah. All right? The point is that if you have an unencrypted hotspot in your house, if you have a Wi-Fi that is broadcasting publicly and they're sniffing data out, there's nothing that's illegal about that.
No.
They haven't done anything wrong. All right? No. And the point that Google made about this whole thing was that all the data is just random packets. It doesn't make any sense, right? It's just random
it's not like
packets
you're flicking
of data.
Through your family photos.
Yeah, it's like they might see. Well, they might not even see a photo. They might see fragments of a photo. You know, it's like this is all just random packets of data. 600 gigabytes worldwide is really not that much information. Yeah. You know. Anyway, so the long and the short of this is that Google has admitted to the mistake, and they said, "Whoops, sorry." Mm. They grounded the Street View cars for the moment while they figured this whole thing out. They have just locked off the 600 gigabytes. They don't intend to use it, so they say. They don't intend to use it. They don't know what to do with it at this point because I think one – and this is just speculation on my behalf. Somebody said, why don't they just delete it? And I think because of their charter of being a search engine and everything, I don't think they can just delete data. I think they have to hold data if they have it. So I think there's – I think they're trying to work out the policy to actually be able to dump this data, you know? So – but in the meantime, governments are turning around saying, you need to hand over the data. Mm. And, Google is saying, not a chance.
Jesus. Yeah.
The German government has actually issued orders for Google to hand over the data, saying
like
that they should have it.
All over again.
And Google has said, no government should have this sort of material.
No,
it's got nothing
exactly
to do with you, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, so Google's admitted their mistake. They know this, and you know, I accept their apology and say, okay, just dump it. As far as I'm concerned, just dump it. We don't need it, right? Now, Conroy has come out basically saying, this is a breach of privacy, and just gone fucking ballistic.
A breach of privacy. This man.
This man.
Irony.
All right?
This man. My
Captain
God,
irony.
The irony.
His quote is, and I actually give you a quote, and this has been confirmed by another senator, the single greatest breach in the history of privacy. The history of privacy.
Really? Oh. So that is the biggest thing that's ever happened worldwide.
Wow.
650 gigs worldwide.
Now,
that's like ridiculous.
Absolutely. It's the most ridiculous statement he could have made. But he goes on, and this is a beautiful thing. Apparently, in the Senate estimates hearing, he went on a series of attacks. Conroy just jumped down Google. Now, everybody has seen through this, and they're all basically saying he's attacking Google because they dared to criticize the internet censorship filter.
Yeah.
He is acting like a child. They said something bad to me, so and they're having to go back, and he's having to go back at them. Everybody is seeing through this. The man is just not fit for that position.
Yeah.
And all I can say is I don't want – and look, I got to make this very clear. I don't want Rudd to lose office in this election because I don't want Tony Abbott as our prime minister. All right, I have a real problem with Tony Abbott as a prime. I have a real problem with the Liberal Party.
Unless you're okay with just sending all asylum seekers back.
Well, we'll just have the Howard government all over again, and I don't want to see that. And I don't want to see Kevin Rudd. But Kevin Rudd's got to get a grip on this, all right?
Yeah.
The buck stops with him, all right? We level our anger at Stephen Conroy because he is the public face of this. But let's face it, everything that Stephen Conroy is doing is because Rudd has put it into place, all right? So the message that we want to deliver here at this election is not to vote out Rudd. The message we want to deliver at this election is to vote out Conroy.
Mm.
He needs to lose his seat. Okay.
Do we know where his seat is? Where is?
I'm not sure. We need to look into that.
Yeah.
We need to really get a campaign going. He needs to lose his seat as a message about this. Right? Because Kevin Rudd at the moment is really facing a very strong possibility of losing this election. He is flip-flopping all over the place. He is making mistakes. He is not standing by anything that he says is the most... I mean, he said the ETS was the single most important issue of all time and then dropped it.
Mm.
You know? It shows him weak. It shows, you know, I would actually have more respect. I got to say, this is going to sound like the strangest thing in the world, but I have more respect for Kevin Rudd and Stephen Conroy if they said, this is our filter, this is what we're doing, and just pushed it through, you know, and took it to an election. Live or die. We'll take it to the election. You vote us out or keep us in.
Yeah, I'll go on the other side, but at least
But I would have respect for him to actually have the balls to man up and say, this is what we stand for, right? What he's
but
got at the moment...
ironically, though, is kind of is what Tony Abbott, I guess, would be more like.
Tony Abbott's a head kicker, of course.
Yeah.
This is what he, you know, Tony Abbott will... take it to his death, his beliefs, and you know, power to him for whatever he wants to do. I hate him, all right? But I just, I'm so sick of this government. They put in the insulation bats. It's an interesting program. They run into some problems. What do? They don't fix the problems. They go, oh, we're just dropping the whole thing. They run the ETS out, the single most important issue of our time. They run into some problems. Do they fix the problems? No, they go, oh, we'll just drop it for the moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this: the internet censorship filter, for all intents and purposes, is shelved at the moment, you know? I don't think Conroy has been told this.
No. But you know what, like the more he says ridiculous, outlandish statements like this, you know, the better the chances are, I think, of him or of the whole thing going away.
Because you
see it all the time when a member of a party, you know, starts getting in the habit of having, you know, like, what's that guy, Barnaby Joyce, in the, you know, he has that shocking week of just the ridiculous stuff.
Oh, you've got Tony Abbott saying, and then, if I say something, I might lie when I speak, but if I write it down, it's okay. It's like, what? What does that mean?
What are you trying to tell us, buddy?
At this stage, I really wouldn't be surprised if closer to the election, if Conroy is still opening his mouth, which is a high possibility, that Rudd just doesn't use that as an excuse to...
Yeah, I actually think that... Conroy, if they do pull the censorship filter from the policy before the election...
The whipping boy.
Conroy will either lose his seat altogether, or he'll be benched. He'll be backbenched.
Yeah.
He's not doing well. I got just a couple of quotes from this article, though, which I thought were just brilliant. According to Google... who am I talking about here? Hold on a second. We've got a quote here that says, Google has argued that the data collected by mistake, but Senator Conroy has rejected this, saying it was, quote, actually quite deliberate. And Google wrote a piece of code designed to do it. Of course they did. They're sniffing out Wi-Fi hotspots. Yeah. You know, it's like nothing happens by accident. Yes, Google was collecting information, but what information were they supposed to be collecting as to what they did collect are two different things. Google probably took the assumption, stupid them, I know, but they probably took the assumption, as any sane person would, most people's private Wi-Fis would be locked.
Yeah.
You know, it's like realistically. I mean, and look, for the average user out there who doesn't understand about the encryption and stuff, let me just give you an idea. Mm. I have a Wi-Fi going through my entire house. It's locked. Don't even come around trying to think about it. But if it wasn't locked, you could come and sit on my front fence and quite happily download anything you wanted because the expanse of my Wi-Fi is the surrounding encompassing. I can actually be three shops up and still pick up my Wi-Fi, you know? So you lock it off so it also doesn't take up your bandwidth. So and there is no excuse. If they download something illegal, it's your ISP number that is going to be seen, you know? And you'll be the one that gets blamed for it, all right? So lock it off, all right? That's just... There's your tech tip for the day. Lock it off.
And if anyone needs to know how to do that, if anyone needs to know how to do that, a public service announcement, drop us an email. We will tell you how to do it.
Absolutely.
I am willing to actually help people with that.
Well, you can feedback help me at feedback@geekactually.com.
I had that freaky thing of, because when we first moved in a year ago, we had neighbors with unlocked off Wi-Fi, and we did pill for that a little bit just for downloads. But then, you know, we only got iNet like a few weeks ago now, and we've got a wireless modem now for the first time. And I had that freaky thing last night, after knowing that I should have locked it off, of going, turning on the computer and the thing popping up saying, such and such random thing is trying to access your internet. And I'm just going, oh God, and running to the modem and switching it off and being like, the bastards, they found me. They're listening in right now.
People could just Google it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, look, everybody's modem is slightly different. The settings are going to be slightly different as to where to put it in. But if you Google your router model into Google, it will give you back those results. It'll tell you exactly how to do all of this stuff. It's really not hard to do.
Maybe that's why Google was doing the research in the first place.
To find out how many unlocked
things. The ISPs of all the unlocked off things.
I'd just like to point out that Senator Ludlam said, and this is one of my favorite quotes about this whole Conroy thing, and then we'll finish it off, says, the minister's on a bit of a hair trigger. So anyone who's criticized the net filters becomes a target for character assassination, whether it be an advocacy group like EFA, or Electronic Frontiers Australia, or one of the largest technology companies like Google. It comes across as really petulant. The guy's a minister of the crown. You don't need to be bawling out technology companies just because they've taken a critical stand against your filter.
Is he a Labor or Liberal?
It doesn't actually say.
I love his books all the same.
not that love them. Where are we? Do we have a
If that was Labor, that I'd
I hope it's Labor. Quite frankly, but you know, Labor and Liberal have all been against him. They're all jumping up.
But Liberal at the moment are kind of criticized. Look at Rudd's shoes.
Yeah, I like this. I like the fact that the Australian Privacy Commissioner Karen Curtis, has launched an investigation into the matter, because of course you have to, right? Mm. But has previously played down the seriousness of the privacy threat. Mm. Basically, and they haven't leveled any charges. They haven't said, Google, we've got a lot stronger privacy controls than, say, America does. But in this particular field, and there's actually been a call out because of this Google thing that America needs to rewrite its privacy issues a little bit, because they don't really have anything to stand on this, whereas Germany and Australia and other countries are jumping up and down about this. You know? It's like, give it a rest. They haven't found out anything about you. They really haven't. It's random packets of data, you know? And, you know, if we take them at their word and they don't do evil,
look, I would be comfortable with a country saying delete those files, because theoretically you have taken data, whether or not you did it by accident, fine, but whether or not you have accessed people's data, that makes sense. Delete it, get rid of it, right? Okay, you've got data that isn't yours. You've kind of broken the law there, right? As far as I'm concerned, whether or not. No, I mean, okay, on a personal level, right?
Interesting. No, I don't think I've actually broken any laws yet.
By taking data from, you know, what people are downloading, I mean, it's kind of a breach
of privacy.
But then
again, if it's an open thing, it's
publicly
kind of
accessible
like,
data.
Yeah, I know. It's like a Bluetooth thing. That's not what I'm saying. It's like I would understand the fear, the threat, the feeling of threat about it. I would understand why countries would be upset. But if you ask for that data, that's a whole other kettle of fish.
Exactly.
Because you're trying to get stuff yours as well, which makes you
Google
incredibly.
To have it to
the German government asking for the data was just wrong. There's problems with that all over the place.
Yeah.
You got to ask yourself, what the hell does the government want with all that data? Let's move on. We're running really long. Now we're just gonna tap on this story, because we're actually gonna come.
Really,
up with...
you bring up a story about privacy and you didn't.
Well, no, not
we
that one.
No.
We did that nicely. That was good. We kind of flogged that one to death. So the next one, we're just gonna tap on this really quickly, because we're gonna bring it up in the after show.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So basically, the iPad went on sale yesterday,
and
the only thing I really want to bring up about this is the cynical marketing thing that occurred to me this morning, and I don't know why it didn't occur to me before. Do you remember when the iPhone 3G launched? Mm-hmm. Right? The iPhone 3G, when it launched in this country, sold out everywhere, right? Everywhere, except the only shop that had 3G still in stock was the Apple Store.
Yeah.
Right? Everywhere it sold out. I had to wait a month before I got mine. Mm-hmm. Now, it occurs to me that we had this huge line of people outside the Apple Store on Thursday night leading up to Friday morning.
They were there from 2 a.m.
2 a.m. Wednesday. Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
lining up to get their iPads, and the Apple Store sold out, right? Now, what I found really ironic about all this was, of course, I spoke to Josh later in the day, and they still had stock, right? Mm. And they hadn't been run out of the building. We'll talk about your actual retail experience in the after show. But the point is this. A week ago, we reported... I think we may have dumped the story, but anyway, a week ago we talked about the fact that a media blackout had actually hit all retailers about the iPad. They weren't allowed to talk about it. They actually said, Apple basically laid out this blackout saying, you're not allowed to talk about the release of iPad until its release date, right? So that all happened, and then of course everybody lines up at the Apple Store, and nobody is aware that it's being sold anywhere else, right? It suddenly occurred to me that this is just Apple cynically wanting a photo opportunity. They want a photo of a long line of people outside their store.
And that's why they built that, you know, the store like that in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the point that they made was 100 meters down the road from the Apple store is another JB Hi-Fi that was empty.
Yeah.
And they had plenty of stock. Yeah. And nobody was in there because nobody knew they had it.
Yeah, well,
you know? And David Jones, which is a block up the road from the major Apple store, was empty, and they had tons of stock.
Yeah, well, the reason for that is literally the fact that those companies didn't know until the day before it came out.
That's right, because of this blackout. Yeah. Apple engineered this campaign so that they would have that line of people. Because what happened on the day of the 3G launch was the line outside the Apple store wasn't that impressive, because everybody was getting it from Optus stores and from, you know, the Vodafone stores and everywhere else. And Apple still had stock. And, of course, once everybody else sold out, that's when they went to the app. But that's not the impressive
launch.
But
don't they still make money if it's sold somewhere else?
Yeah, but they want the photo opportunity. It's not about making the money. They want the photo opportunity. They want that photo of that line of people outside the Apple store so that it's on the front page of the newspaper. Everybody's saying, oh, and they want that quote that says, we sold out in the first hour or whatever it was.
But I find that bizarre that... I mean, because I was working in news, like, on the night of the launch, and so we had all the footage of the people lining up. and there were so many people, and there were a lot of people that got turned away or that couldn't get one. And like, how much money is that that Apple then lost?
Yeah, but couldn't get one walked 100 meters down the road afterwards because the sales on iPads went through the roof after like midday. Apparently, JB Hi-Fi sent out a newsletter to all the registered users at midday saying, you can come and get it.
Well, yeah, funnily enough, because we had a bunch of customers coming through the store actually going, I didn't actually even know it was out, but I got this email.
That's right.
So here I am. And it was like...
So this media buy, and it worked beautifully. It worked perfectly in their favor. And look, I have this wonderful photo. I think this is from the US launch. Look at them. Yay!
Look at them.
Look at them go. Aren't they a happy
angry,
bunch?
Angry geek.
Sorry, I'm bringing up a photo for our audio listeners. I'm bringing up a photo of the Apple store staff.
No, clapping. I want to see the reverse photo where it's the camera facing the people that have been waiting 27 hours and them just sitting there like...
The disheveled masses.
Or now like the four people there with iPads while everyone else is like across the street lining up in the front.
The front five that didn't want to fall asleep in case they lost their thing, just sitting there going, just shut up and give it to me.
There's the photo up for you. You have this huge line and across the road, a whole line of people walking with iPads. They've got the JB down the road.
Yeah, they're all walking past in the back line, kind of looking back.
What? I bought this from a guy selling it on the corner.
Now, the other very quick community announcement is all those people who ordered one from the States to sell them on eBay at highly inflated prices. Time's up.
Yeah, you guys are stuck with them now.
Yeah, you missed out. If you didn't get it on eBay in time and it hasn't sold in time, forget it. You're not going to get the sale now. All right, let's move on. Now, we have tech. We actually have a crossover. This is our crossover article to take us from tech into film, which is, of course, Sam Mendes, the film director, who here's a picture of Sam Mendes looking very intense. He's the director of American Beauty, Road to Perdition. Now, he has now signed on to do a series of Apple iPhone commercials, which I find bizarre because the thought that occurred to me about this whole article was that Apple is not really known for commercials that have a lot of narrative to them. They're usually like, you know, dancing silhouettes or some images or what have you. Why would you need a major motion picture director to come in to direct, you know, the screen of an iPad with a finger flicking apps around?
I'm just picturing like 3 minutes of gripping character development.
Well, it looks like they are actually going to have a little bit more in the way of character this time around. And they have actually confirmed, because I mean, we're still trying to lock in all the confirmation of all these rumors of iPhones. They have confirmed basically that there will be a front-facing camera. So first rumor has been confirmed because one of the ads apparently is about a mother-daughter having a video chat. So they're showing off that feature. So we have kind of confirmed that the mock-ups that we've been seeing or these leaked ones are kind of real. I knocked this graphic up for the website. I thought this kind of summed the whole thing up. This is Sam Mendes directing an iPhone ad. All right, so yeah, I don't know where this is leading to, but we'll see. There was confirmation that they are making these ads because people are actually putting Twitter posts up, and this was actually Twittered by an actress who put her Twitter post up that quite simply says, audition tomorrow for a fucking Apple commercial directed by Sam Mendes. Going to go pray for like 24 hours straight for a miracle. So,
yeah, obviously 24 meant a lot hours to her. That she could have spent, or you know, practicing, rehearsing.
Stop praying, get better. All right, so of course we have to bring this up. This is Josh's favorite image for the week. Ridley Scott goes 3D. Big
I
time.
Love the choice of image. He's just so incredibly intense.
I know. It's like Ridley
and the glasses just
as
work.
Hamlet.
All right, so Ridley
in
Scott
3D.
Was starring Russell Crowe. Medieval U-boats.
It's starring Denzel Washington and him
as
everyone.
Yeah. All right, so Ridley Scott... we already know is eager to jump into the 3D world. He's already said that he wants to direct the Alien prequels. Can I just stress back-to-back prequels?
Yeah.
He wants to shoot the Alien prequels in 3D, but he's not going to stop there. Oh, no. He's decided that 3D is the place to be, so he's gone into a negotiation to basically purchase a 3D company. Mm-hmm. In fact, what they call forming a partnership between his company and another company with Symphony 3D, which is the parent company to one of the top manufacturers of 3D glasses and projection systems called Master Image 3D. For those who don't know, Ridley Scott's company is called Scott Free Productions. Mm-hmm. The new company will be called Scott 3 Productions. I kid you not. That's
Scott,
not a joke.
He should have gone Scott 3.0.
So Scott 3 Productions, which will produce the Alien films. And, of course, I got a shudder down my spine when I read this, because all I could think is if he owns a 3D company and he is so in love with it, how long until he upscales Blade Runner, the original Alien, Robin Hood, Kingdom of Heaven, Gladiator. Will he upscale?
I'd rather him downscale Robin Hood to not existing.
Or to the story of Robin Hood. Yeah, what a concept. All right, we'll leave Ridley behind. Anybody got thoughts on Ridley in 3D?
No.
No, good.
Right. I'm trying to keep it locked out of my memory, because that way I don't think about it, because if I think about it too long, my brain may explode or melt out my ear.
And that's fair enough. And just to help your brain along just that little bit further.
Oh, God.
Last week I actually kind of skipped over a couple things. No, we're on track here at the moment. Okay. Now, just to help melt your brain just that little bit further, Michael Bay has been casting with his penis again, and his replacement for Megan Fox, we remember this is the really classy Megan Fox, right? This is the, you know, she's just really, really
girl
classy.
Girl power.
She's really classy woman, and she's now being replaced by Victoria's Secret model, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley. And as you can see, she's another really classy girl.
Is she making out with a Muppet?
No, I think she just skinned it.
She's wearing a Muppet skin. Anyway, so she's got that same vacant, vapid look that, you know, Megan Fox had. And, you know, as I pointed out in the article on geekactually.com, can she act? I don't think Michael Bay cares.
I'd prefer her to Megan Fox, because at least there's no pretense that she's an actor.
No, that's true. And, she takes her top off. If you go online, you can find lots of nude photos of this girl. Right. So now, this is not Michael Bay's first relationship with Victoria's Secret. About a month and a half ago, Dave Kosicki actually brought this to our attention. And we actually had it set up on the board and everything, and the show ran a bit long, and we didn't get to it. All right? Today, because of the Victoria's Secret model and because it's a Michael Bay story, I present to you Michael Bay's Victoria's Secret ad. Now, this is no joke. This is a real ad. Michael Bay directed their Christmas catalog ad. He's actually directed 4 ads for them.
How many breast implants exploded in this?
I was about to say, before you jump up and down and say, Michael Bay, you know, where's the explosions, the helicopters, the slow motion walking towards camera, the low angle shots? Wait and watch, my friends. All right, this is lingerie, Michael Bay style. Completely epic.
Is it wrong that I was more turned on by the fact that that was the music from the first Iron Man teaser trailer than I was by any of the girls?
All right, so for our audio listeners...
The girls are very hot.
Oh, they're really hot. Look, for our audio listeners, I do apologize because that was just a minute and a half of music, rock and music. But if you want to see that trailer, we have it embedded on geekactually.com. Just look for the article about Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, and you'll actually see that trailer. It's embedded right there in high def.
Just,
so,
just
with explosions and helicopters.
Exactly. I actually wrote in the article, I've got the printout of the article right here. What I wrote was, Michael Bay is no stranger to the world of Victoria's Secret. He has directed 4 commercials for them. Now, before you say anything, I know what you're thinking. How could Michael Bay direct an underwear ad? Where are the explosions, helicopters, and slow motion walking shots? Just watch. Right. So if you haven't seen it, everything that you know about Michael Bay is right there, including no acting. All right.
And
so,
I'm pretty sure Shia LaBeouf was actually one of the women.
And all I can think about, you know, okay, he's cast this new girl. It's something else for Shia to apologize about. All right.
That's what he's like after sex, too, apparently.
Rob in our chat room. Hi, Rob. How are you? He's from Real Junkies at WeekendRonin.com. Rob has said, yes, explosions.
We all let out the mail roll when it came up.
I should have just kept the mics open for that one.
I told you.
I should have just kept the mics open. All right. Very quickly, let's kick through some of this because we've got to get to our TV stuff. Before I play the next trailer, there was actually supposed to be no break here, but before we play that next trailer, we'll just don't do video, straight onto video. Mass Effect is being turned into a movie. Legendary Pictures, who produced Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and Superman Returns, amongst other films, has bought the rights to BioWare's game. Mark Protasevich, who is the, I hope I pronounced that right, who is the guy who wrote I Am Legend and has written Thor, has been hired to screenwrite, and Avi Arad is producing. Actually, it's funny because Avi Arad and his brother Ari Arad are producing the film.
Son, I think.
Is it son? Is it? Okay, I just assumed brother.
Because I saw that and I was like, oh, come on. You just changed one consonant to name your son.
Well, it's kind of like making John Jr.
It's like me calling my son Bon.
So, Mass Effect video game movies. I mean, our feature review is a video game movie. Yeah. Do we think this is a good idea?
I think it has a lot of potential, and I think Ben will agree with me on that. It's like, out of anything that they could make, there is so little that you could fuck up with this one if you just try.
And if you really explore the Mass Effect games, I mean, through codexes and everything, there's so much history there. So
there's so much
lore
to take.
There's a lot of potential for them to create their own story, you know. I mean, we'll talk more about
we'll get to
it,
video game
when
adaptations
get to Prince of Persia, but
look, I'm a huge fan of Mass Effect. I mean, this is no secret. We talk about it on platforms a lot.
Every time we mention it on platforms,
I
Dave
get a little,
goes on
I get a little,
a little.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan. I don't think this is a good idea. I think that Mass Effect works as a game. Mm-hmm. I think it is an amazingly immersive experience. I love the two games. I actually don't want to see this film. It's just personal. I have not yet been proven to, over many, many, many adaptations that video games actually do
convert to
film well.
Particularly with Mass Effect, because the problem is that that game is catered so specifically towards the individual. You know, like I found even from watching Celine play Mass Effect.
A different game style. Yeah.
Yeah, and the different character, it just changes the game. And you kind
of
don't look at it the same way.
What happens if the writer decides to make the Shepard character a complete renegade, right? And I would watch it and go, I don't connect with that because that's not how I played it.
Yeah.
And I hate the default Shepard character as well, with a passion. And
oh, really? I play the default Shepard.
No, see, I started with my own and then I tried to do default. And, I mean, I might have liked default if I'd started with default. But it's just like when you're so attached to your character because... The fact that the whole story and everything weaves around
your
choices. It's
funny because when I first played Mass Effect, I put on the game, when I first bought it, you remember when I first bought it, I customed the crap out of the character and started playing it and then never got really that heavily invested in it and kind of went out and just put it on the back burner for a while. When I came back to the game about, you know, 2 months later or 3 months later or whatever it was, I kind of went, well, I'm going to start from scratch because it's been so long since I played, I'm just going to start from scratch, and I just fired up the default character. You know, I'll just play it as that default character. And I'm so used to that character now, that's all I could play.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and it's, as once again, as you said, it's so personal, the
it's
game.
Like, it almost is like, you know, recasting, you know, during a franchise or something. Like, I can't play the second Mass Effect, even though the first Mass Effect's a bit of a slog after the improvements, you know, of the second one. kind of, I feel like I can't do it unless I've had the run up, you know, with the story, because otherwise you're aware that it is just a game, whereas the, you know...
Also, I mean, yeah, I think there was a point that was made just prior to going live on this show today, where, and we'll bring up this in video game adaptations later, which is the idea that using the Mass Effect universe might be okay, but trying to make a Mass Effect film...
Yeah. Well, like, I mean...
even if they just use Shepard as a generic...
Hey, Josh has got a point. Josh
the fourth time you cut me up on that.
Josh has got a point.
No, I just wanted to say that this will be the first video game movie that, if reviews are bad, I just won't see. Because I do not
I don't
want
to destroy it.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't want to be destroyed. And, like, I mean, this is the whole thing. We keep going around the point. But Ben beautifully brought that up before the show, saying that, you know, like, the reason that it never works is because the fact that you can't follow necessarily a storyline, you should be focusing on the world. That is so true. Yeah. And this is one of those games where it's just, like, if we don't step away from the character of Shepard, and we don't step right from the thing, maybe introduce a few of the support characters that you run past. I'd be fine with that, because, I mean, like, that's your wink at the camera, that's your, you know, thing out for the people and of the world. But if you go near this game and you make a bad thing, it's just, I don't think people will go watch it. Because
I like Snake Oz has actually made a good point in our chat room. By the way, I'd like to say that all these people have joined our chat room. Hello, chat room. Okay. We started with a very empty chat room today. Everybody slept in, I think. Snake Oz has made a very good point in our chat room that says, Wing Commander, good game, hard to stuff up, I rest my case. And it's so true.
Yeah.
You took a game like Wing Commander, which had a really... strong story, strong characters, everything else, and then to turn a film that has nothing to do with the game. I mean, literally just took the game and went, nah, we don't need that.
Yeah.
And just went in its completely its own direction.
That's,
you know?
It's like it with Mass Effect, especially, too. I remember when the second one came out and seeing the list of all the new characters and just thinking, oh, but, you know, I got so attached to the ones in the first one, it'll be that sequel thing of all new characters. But by the end of the second one, you know, you're with every single character.
Mm.
They could easily do that with a movie. You know, they could have a Turian and, you know, the Krogan and everything, but just make their own characters.
Look, I mean,
archetypes, but make it their own.
Yeah. Shane, you've been very quiet. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I was just going to say one thing. The third game is in process now. We don't need to hear about it.
Yeah, exactly. It is actually an interesting story. And will it come out after the third game? Because I reckon that would be where I would accept it. Because if they try
they
and
Prince of Persia it and tailor the game,
or will
to
they say
it
we're
going to
make
it
a trilogy and try and do all?
Oh, that. Or are they going to go the whole Wachowski thing and try and fit the games and the movies into the storyline and we'll have like the character crossing?
Now I'd like to point out we actually because I wasn't paying attention to the chat room because it was so empty at the beginning of the show and suddenly we've got all these people in there. I would like to point out that there is actually a wonderful comment back a while ago now about the Michael Bay situation. Northy, you said you were going to be in the chat room today. Anyway, welcome. Northy says Michael Bay should seriously direct porn. Hot chicks are good, but lack of acting just ruins the movie. And after that, if he made
whereas
porn...
Whereas lack of acting is an asset in a porn
absolutely,
film.
If he made a porn film that looked like that Victoria's Secret commercial, that would be awesome. I would seriously, seriously buy that DVD.
Yeah.
All right. Now, look, as far... we'll get into video game adaptations, and we'll probably even... bleed over into the after show because I'm sure there's a lot to say about this. We've talked about video game adaptations again. I am yet to be wowed by the concept of a video game being
translated.
Well,
look, the only thing that
I hope it'll happen one day. I really do because there are a lot of great... Like, one, I think Assassin's Creed, that is a franchise I would love to see make it into the film world.
The only thing I can think about the Mass Effect thing that does breed me a little bit of hope is I feel very Star Trek-ish about it, and it does feel really kind of enveloped world kind of a situation.
Yep, yep.
So, like, I mean, there is possibility for a movie working just based entirely on the fact that you've got so much lore and so much life and so much to stretch
just
out.
Just don't make it about the Normandy.
Oh, yeah. Look, if you leave it out or if you follow a particular different storyline or maybe do a prequel or something that's set after the events of the third game, which would work for me, because, I mean, like, everyone's going to be at the end of Mass Effect 3 and the game, no doubt, I hope very dearly, that they don't screw it up. But if they don't screw it up, then you have probably an amazing crescendo of storyline. You'll have a brilliant, own world, all created in those three things, and then there's nothing left for us. So a movie would just drive me insane. That's like, you know, it's it's like adding on Serenity onto Firefly. It's
the
like
first interactive movie. a choose-your-own-adventure movie.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, that'd work well in a cinema. Me and Ben are just sitting there on opposite sides of the thing, going, "No,
Renegade,
no,
Renegade,
go
Renegade."
Oh, Snake Eyes has just put
Josh,
up in our chat room.
I was listening to that scene. And you punched the chick in the face. Thanks a lot.
She was pissing me off.
All right. We're kind of jumping between two stories here, but they're still going on about Michael Bay in the chat room. Snake Oz has now said we would never see a porn film like that Victoria's Secret ad because, of course, of our censorship laws here. He quotes Pirates, the two-disc version. We talked about that once before. This is what importing from overseas is for.
Yeah. Or peer-to-peer.
We at Geek actually do not approve these.
No. I was about to say it's bad.
It's bad. But yes, I mean, there's nothing to say that we couldn't log on to one of the adult websites and buy the U.S. version of it. And if Michael Bay made a porn film that looked like that Victoria's Secret ad, I would be buying. Let me tell you right now. I would be buying it. All right. Logan's Run. Now, we've mentioned Logan's Run on this show before, I think about 2 years ago, actually, when we first started, because at that time, Bryan Singer was attached to directing a remake of Logan's Run. Now, for those who don't know Logan's Run, and I think Josh has not seen it.
No,
correct?
I actually haven't. That's
no, Josh
true.
Has not
it's
seen
one,
it. We're going to sit down and watch Logan's Run at some time. It's horribly dated at this point. I mean, the models look like models, and you know, and all this, but it had some really serious concepts. It had this whole idea of free sex and free love, and yet for some reason, tobacco was illegal. Go figure. You know, really odd ideas. The basic story is in this future society. Now, the book and the film are different, and I'm going to go with the film synopsis at this point because it's what I know better. Mm. I have read the book, but it was a long time ago. But in the film, basically, when you reach the age of 30, you're killed. All right? Mm. So it's a future world. They live in this, like, dome city, and everybody has a stone in their hand, which basically dictates their age. When you reach a certain age, you go on the carousel, you're vaporized, and the concept is you're going to be reborn as a baby. It keeps population down. Right? And so it's almost like a religious thing. Some people don't buy into this. They want to find sanctuary, which is where you can live out your life, and they become runners. And there is an elite police force called the Sandmen who basically go out and kill the runners, right, to stop them from getting away. So that's basically the story. It's a really interesting idea. The book, the age is actually 21, not 30, and it actually makes it even more kind of relevant to today.
God, so he's trapped in a perpetual age of teenagehood.
Yeah,
oh,
pretty
gosh.
Much.
Jesus.
Kind of feels like Australian television. No. Anyway.
Oh, snap.
Oh,
damn. That was brutal.
Oh, I know. That was just too hard. Anyway, in the original novel, it's not a dome city and all that. Anyway, the point is that it's a really great story, and I would love to see this film redone because I think it is one of those few films. There's very few films that I actually say I want to see a remake of.
Alex Proyas. He'll probably do it.
No, he's not the right director.
That's all he does.
No, he's not the right director. It's not. Yeah, no, it's, no, it's
I'm not saying he'd be good, but that's just like the only movie he ever does.
Maybe.
Type.
So I'm not a big fan of remakes, as we know, but there are occasionally films where I go, boy, that could really use an updating. And Logan's Run is such a great topic, especially in today's world. Where we do seem to be living in this infant world where we don't seem to cast outside of fetus age, that it really is relevant. And, you know, where we sit there and say there's no place for old people, right? And then that's kind of how we feel in this world at the moment. So I think it is a really interesting point. Now, Bryan Singer pulled out of it a long time ago. This film has gone through many directors over the years. Robert, what's his name? Schwentke, the director of Flight Plan, was attached to it at one point. Mm-hmm. James McTeague, who did V for Vendetta, was attached to it at one point. Joseph Kosinski was the last person attached to it, but of course he went to do Tron Legacy.
So this
all comes up is a new director is now in talks. And that new director is a fascinating choice because he's the guy who was supposed to direct the Alien prequel until Ridley Scott took it away from him. And that's the commercial director, Carl Rinch. Now, Carl Rinch directed For Phillips. They had not a competition. It was kind of like a short film experiment where they took one script and they basically said, make a film out of that one script. And all these people made these short films out of this one very simple script. His was called The Gift and was so popular, and it's embedded on geekactually.com. You can go have a look. There's very little dialogue, and the dialogue is in Russian because his is all set in Russia. So I didn't bother putting a copy in the show today. But if you go to the posting about Logan's Run, it's embedded in there. Have a look at it. studio executives went berserk. They actually want to make a feature film out of The Gift, which could be interesting if you have a look at the visuals in it. Fascinating. Science fiction-y robots. It's really bizarre. And he was also attached to another film called 47 Ronin, which he's working on now. I have no idea what 47 Ronin's about. And now...
Isn't Keanu Reeves involved in that one?
Possibly.
I think that's the one that is.
And now,
oh, man,
of course,
why'd you say that? The whole concept, Ronin, 47 of them, I was on. That was all I needed to hear.
Keanu Reeves works in Kung Fu because he fights and doesn't talk.
I will accept that.
Yeah, he worked in The Matrix. So he's now in serious talks to direct a remake of Logan's Run. Whether he's going to reimagine the novel or he's remaking the film, we don't know. I would actually really like to see
that.
Is
he going
to go
with the 21-year-old? That would be really...
I really hope they take it to the 21-year-old, because that is
also
actually...
it sells a bit better as well, because sexier people, 21, you know.
Yeah, well, and yeah, exactly. It's almost an irony in itself.
Yeah.
What studio is
Warner's?
Is that where?
Yeah, it's Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers has been attached to it for... Warner Brothers has been trying to get this remake off the ground. Ready? 2.5 decades. They've been trying to get this remake off the ground. So they haven't had a lot of luck bringing it off the ground. I was really looking forward to Bryan Singer's take on it.
I'm so sick of Bryan Singer.
Well, this is before we were sick of it. This is
how many projects has he?
Well, exactly.
Going to commit to this, and
this
then
is
he
when he was
often.
Put it this way, he was prepping Logan's Run. He was up to the conceptual art stage and the whole bit. He was prepping Logan's Run right after he was hot off the X-Men and before he did Superman. So it was right when he was in that hot period.
Right in the period where he broke my heart.
I actually think that he's actually retired from directing and just hasn't told anyone. And basically what he's being used as now is just
a marketing tool. Yeah.
Exactly. They're just like, and Bryan Singer's doing this. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh my God, Bryan Singer, quick. Type to everyone you know. Put this on Facebook. Let's dig out of this.
Bryan Singer actually died years ago. And what they've done is they've animated him with strings. Like Weekend of Bernie style. Weekend of Bryan's.
He's a CG creature. You only see him on screens.
Actually, he was created in a lab by James Cameron. You know, is it entirely digital?
Very possible. Very possible. So I am actually kind of excited about Logan's Run. I would actually like to see them get this done. I'm thinking about watching Logan's Run tonight, actually. I've been thinking about watching it again for a while. I really enjoyed the original Logan's Run. As I say, a little bit dated. Model work, they look like models. I mean, none of it looks real anymore.
It's all very sort of like sterile white.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very 70s sci-fi. And stuff. Lots of silvery robots. And and Jenny Argutter's boobs. So, you know, any film you get Jenny Argutter's boobs, good thing. All
right. I know it's on my checklist for every film I see.
Absolutely.
It wasn't in Prince of Persia, unfortunately.
This is actually a shot from Logan's Run for you guys, if you want to see. I love the gun.
I love his hair.
Love the gun. Michael York, Jenny Argutter, Richard Jordan, and of course Peter Ustinov in one of the wonderful screen performances. It's just fantastic. Anyway, let's have a look at a trailer here. We actually kind of skipped over this trailer, so we'll go jump back to this trailer. Now, this was the reason why I'm playing this trailer is because I was kind of fascinated because it's produced by J.J. Abrams. Now, he didn't direct it, all right, so it's not one of his films as such, but he's produced this light, fluffy comedy. But it's got Diane Keaton and Harrison Ford and Rachel McAdams and Jeff Goldblum, and the cast is sensational.
He did the same thing I did.
He did exactly the same thing I did.
Comedy.
It's like
Diane
you were telling
Keaton.
Me. It was like comedy. You lost me more and more each time you were talking. It was like comedy. I was like, ugh. And then you were like romantic comedy. I was like, ugh. And then it's like Diane Keaton. I'm like, oh, Jesus
Christ.
Right? Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, big surprise. Diane Keaton, romantic comedy.
All right, now before you guys jump on, see, you guys are too young. Diane Keaton is actually very good at comedy. Let's not forget that one of her signature roles was a Woody Allen film called Annie Hall. And the woman has got great comic timing. Harrison Ford is also very good at comedy and was in Mike Nichols' Working Girl. And at that time, nobody thought he could do comedy. And he's got very good timing and he's quite charming.
The key word there is was.
Now, why I bring this up and one of the reasons why I want to show this trailer is because when I watched it, I went, wow, that's kind of cute. Because Harrison Ford is playing a grumpy bastard. And he is so, just watch. he's just horrible. All right, so here we go. Here's the film. And I love the name, too, because I think the name in Australia may have a different meaning.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is the trailer for Morning Glory.
Did you get a job yet?
No, but I have feelers out. Lots.
So you're a fan of our morning program?
How many?
Yeah, we know it's terrible.
Coming up tomorrow, we'll show you what to do with those shampoo bottles with just an inch of shampoo left. Huh.
Daybreak's understaffed, underfunded. Any producer who works there will be publicly ridiculed, overworked, on the pay. Awful.
I'll take it.
I'd like to offer you the position of co-host of Daybreak.
After the career that I've had.
Is he gonna cook? Is he gonna do fashion segments and gossip?
Not my thing.
You happen to be a pretentious, fatuous idiot.
A fatuous idiot who makes three times what you make.
So now is an excellent time for you to take up drinking.
What's going on now?
Mike is offended by a word in the next story.
It's about Easter chicks.
I'm not saying the word fluffy. Interesting. Jerry hired you. No polish. Those bangs.
Suppose I don't have standards?
Sure you do. When you got your pep smear on air, you wore a silk robe.
Okay!
Fuzzy touch.
It wasn't that bad. I feel
happy. Yeah.
How reliable is your alarm clock?
You want to make the ratings worse? That's why you came here?
I'm not giving up.
Try not to bore the nation into a coma with your dominance crap.
Suck it.
Mike! No one can do their jobs around here well, because you can't be bothered to do yours at all!
And we're back.
Welcome back to Daybreak.
It's only my job. It's not my whole life, right?
You're worse than I am. I was never at home. When I was, I took every phone call, watching TV out of the corner of my eye. Let me tell you how it all turns out. End up with nothing, which is what I had till you came along.
Take what you want, steal my pride, build me up, or cut me down the side. Shut me out, but I just scream. I'm only one voice in a million, but you ain't taking that from me. But you ain't taking that from me. You ain't taking that.
Kissy?
That's a little, that's wrong. Do it again.
All I can say is, I think that's Josh in about 30 years.
Yeah. You know what? Fuck you. That's all I have to say on that note. Dude, seriously, it does follow incredibly close. Like,
to Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically the same movie. I liked Harrison Ford in that trailer. I thought he was
Look,
really
I think Rachel McAdams is charming, and yeah. I think she's done some really nice work. So it'll
Absolutely.
Be interesting.
She's Diane Keaton, Anne Hathaway. That's fine.
Yeah, Diane Keaton, when she is on fire, can actually be a very funny lady. And she plays exasperated really well.
I think I would
she
almost...
She seems better in that than Harrison Ford's character.
Look, yeah, Harrison Ford just looks grumpy as hell.
But I'm so sick of that cliche that whenever they do a TV presenter or something, it's the same character. And like, I mean, I work at the ABC, and like, there are people with those tendencies, but there's no one who is 100% just like every moment they're off screen is like, where's my scotch? I'm just a bastard. How do I get a job?
Everybody's like that at the ABC, aren't they?
Oh, well, you know, Tony Jones.
All right,
no,
Tony,
I mean, God forbid I actually have a date at that particular time, but I would probably go see that. And I imagine
I'll be
that,
seeing this, trust
and,
me.
Yeah, exactly. I know you will. That's an obvious thing. I would probably go see that under those pretenses, and I think I would enjoy, if nothing else about that film, just the on-screen relationship between Diane Keaton and Harrison Ford, because every moment they were talking, yeah. I was like, ha, yeah. Genius.
I love watching seasoned professionals play, and what you often get in these sort of films is you get these wonderful actors who have been around for a long time getting a chance to just play. It's like the comedy that came out in the late 90s called Soap Dish, yeah. With Whoopi Goldberg and Sally Field, and they just had fun, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's really fun watching these really professional actors who usually do very serious stuff just get a chance to cut loose, you know? Mm-hmm. And have a bit of fun. I like the fact that Jay Raggy in our chat room has said, just go to the drive-in, then you don't need to watch it. How old are you? What drive-in do you go to? What drive-ins still exist?
There's one out west, I think, in Sydney.
They closed it down for a bit, and I think they've only just opened it again this year.
There is one left in Brisbane, according to Jay Raggy. So
I'm pretty sure there's one in Western Suburbs.
If I wanted to go drive-in Raggy, that's a long way to go.
Yeah. Dude, like, plus for TV. LCD.
Oh, there's a marketing idea for you. A couch with like a front of a car on it.
Drive big screen. You hold it like a Mario Kart Wii.
But do you have to put the little tiny speaker up next to your head? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, and then you invite the neighbors to come over and be really loud next to you.
All right. So that trailer didn't set you on fire. Let's put our comic book guy hats on, guys. We got a little bit of comic news. We're going to fly through some of this because anything that goes into long, detailed conversation, we might just take into the after show.
Yeah.
All right. First, Tommy Lee Jones confirmed for Captain America.
Check.
Not good. As Captain America.
No, yeah.
You know what? I would be down with that. I just want to see Tommy Lee Jones running around and kicking ass.
The old school for this way. Shit.
Somebody 21. Has the car couch. Jay Raggy's put a link in our chat room for the AmericanRetroFurniture.com has a car couch.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Yeah. All right. I'm not as original as I thought. Okay. The rumor has it. We don't know who exactly he's playing yet, but the rumor has it that he'll probably be playing General Chester Phillips. Yeah. Does this make sense to you?
It does.
You're the real Captain
either,
America
either
person?
Him or the other person that he could be is Erskine, who is the scientist who creates the serum. And
seems
then,
more military,
and
then, though.
Yeah, well, it's Tommy Lee Jones. There's no cowboys in
World War II. Here's Tommy Lee Jones. Who's he suit?
Exactly.
Here's Tommy Lee Jones. Who does he
suit? I just don't see him in a lab coat. I think he would punch someone if
although
he was
if
in
look,
a lab coat.
If you look at Erskine, he's a very, like, kind of... one comic I have, you look at a picture of him, it looks exactly like Harvey Keitel.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, I don't know. But yeah, it'll probably be Chester Phillips, who was a character who kind of got... I don't think he was actually in the origin, like the
is
original
he the
comic.
Is he in the Ultimates origin? Because I think this is where they're going.
He's not in Ultimates. But in the original comics, he wasn't there until... Captain America was in the Avengers, and then they kind of did flashbacks and was like, this is the guy that recruited you.
All right. Next piece of comic book news. Drew Pierce is to adapt The Runaways. Marvel Comics, Runaways.
This is a lot more exciting, I reckon.
Now, Runaways, I'm not real familiar with Runaways. They were in Civil War, though, weren't they?
Briefly. They're one of those Marvel... series where they try to keep it away or out of the main spotlight as much as possible and kind of make it more of a contained story.
Yeah, I think just vaguely remember, is one of them a Skrull? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
No, I think you're thinking of
Young Avengers? Maybe,
yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Anyway, according to this, it says that Brian K. Vaughan wrote The Runaways. Drew Pierce is responsible for Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, sorry, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Helmer, Peter Solit. Is signed to helm.
I really like that film too. Nick and
I haven't seen it. I'm not a huge Michael Cera fan, which is one of the reasons why.
It's one of his better ones
it.
Because you don't have to jump that hurdle from the beginning of him being really dweebish. Mm. He's kind of normal in that. He's kind of cool.
Michael Cera film I'm watching is
Scott Pilgrim.
I'll make a judgment after.
I'd say he's more Scott Pilgrim than he is, say, George Michael from Arrested Development.
Okay. All right, so you're more excited about The Runaways coming out. So the reason why I'm deferring to Ben is because Ben is like comic book guy for us.
Yes.
Dave planned this show.
I put as many comic book things as I could.
The reason I'm kind of interested in it is because... So this is from Marvel Studios, you know, and this and Ant-Man are the only two other films, really, that have been... I mean, they've mentioned casually Luke Cage or Doctor Strange and things like that. But these are the first two confirmed ones post-Avengers. But what I find really interesting about it is that, I mean, Captain America and Thor, it's going to be cool, sure, but they're really tied in with the previous ones, whereas this is going to be the first film that is its own completely separate film that's still just part of that universe.
I agree, yes.
So it'll be really interesting just to have a
unique film. Yeah, I think
film,
some of the secondary
just
characters
have little
are going to
pass away, like maybe a newspaper with like Stark on the front page or things like that. I think it'll be the first film where it really starts to feel like there really is a Marvel cinematic universe.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that the expanded universe is sometimes more interesting than what's going on in the main universe. All right,
Joss Whedon has been writing it at the moment, the comics for
Astonishing X-Men.
For Runaways. He's writing it at the moment, I think. Yeah, and he's been doing it for a bit. So coming off the back of the Avengers, you know, there could be some interesting overlap with that as well. So.
Cool.
All right, we're going to leave. Cool. We've got an article here about the shortlist and the casting of Spider-Man. We'll leave that to the after show because we're running out of time drastically. But and that's going to spark some debate. So we'll come back to that in the after show. I do want to just very quickly throw out James McAvoy has been cast as Professor X in X-Men First Class or X-Men Origins First Class.
I don't have a problem with the way he looks. I just have the problem with the way that, like, I mean, he doesn't have the ability really to do an American accent in any way or form.
Well, he's not American though.
Well,
technically.
Yeah, I know. But like, even like, I mean, that deep Patrick Stewart goodness is what I think of.
I'm not convinced that McAvoy's got it. Quite frankly.
But again, like, I mean, actors have really surprised me before.
One of the X-Men,
but not exactly.
And I mean, like, you have to leave this in the hands of the people that are in control.
And look, I trust...
Not when it's Fox, Josh.
Not when it's Fox. Matthew Vaughn. And yeah. I trust the writer. What's her name? I don't know if your head's... My mind's gone blank now.
I know what you mean, though. I trust them.
You know, I don't trust Fox at all, but I trust Matthew Vaughn.
Well, you look at Vaughn, though.
The right people, though, for... I mean, because if you look at Vaughn's works, like, he's done some great... He's good... All his things, with the exception of maybe Stardust, which I didn't mind.
Well, I love Stardust.
But they all have like an edge to them, you know, like Layer
No,
Cake
but like
and,
I mean, dude,
and,
I,
and,
if you
I
think
know.
Of if you think of McAvoy outside, kind of maybe you know his more like recent roles, like the ones that everybody kind of knows, the man does have the ability to act. So I'm not putting that part. And when I think of Vaughn, I don't think he's a bad actor. Yeah, and when I think of Vaughn, when everyone first talked about the casting of Kick-Ass. When they first saw who they were going to use, like right back when the comic was starting and people were just starting to get into it, people said that it was a stupid choice because, you know, you look at him in the comic book and he's got the blonde, you know, straight hair and he's very, you know, he's a lot darker in look, you know, like as a person.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like people just went, that's a stupid idea. So, I mean, like if you look at Vaughn, like, I mean, he thinks about what he does. Like, I mean, that character was, you know, put into the movie for a reason. So... Like, I mean, I say let's hold off until we've seen him in the costume.
Yeah, it's
in
the first.
Character.
Put it this way: since the whole X-Men Origins First Class project started, for me, this feels like the first misstep. I've actually been kind of supportive of this project because of Matthew Vaughn's hiring, and I figure that this was the man who was supposed to direct X-Men 3 and had to pull out. And it's like he's familiar with the territory. He is a huge comic book geek. I would hope that he has a lot of love for this. And the love that he showed Kick-Ass just says that he has a love for the material.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hold off judgment. I just don't know if he's what I envisioned as Professor X.
Yeah.
You know?
But again, if you said it yourself, that's your envisaging.
That's right.
Exactly.
Absolutely. It's all completely subjective.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, for me, I mean, I'm really just not happy with that whole Fox has killed X-Men for me. If Matthew Vaughn was doing a reboot of X-Men, that'd be different. But the fact that he's doing a prequel to Bryan Singer's X-Men...
But he's not. He's rebooting it. That's what he's already said.
Yeah. It's a full reboot of the whole franchise? Is that confirmed?
Well, not of the whole franchise. Basically, he's saying that X-Men Origins...
It will stand alone.
It's standing alone. It's not
But I can still see Ben being the guy that's standing outside when we're all waiting to go into the cinema, surrounded by really bouncy, happy fanboys, and he's just in there like... I'm already done with this shit. I'm just here to get this over with.
Yeah, I think Matthew Vaughn is...
Yeah, no, look, I'll definitely see it, but I mean...
I think Matthew Vaughn is envisioning...
Wolverine sucked a lot of passion that I had for X-Men out of my
but
body.
But then again,
was already
but this is the thing. Wolverine sucked a lot of passion out of the franchise, but it doesn't take away from me what was achieved in 1 and 2. Because 1
exactly.
and 2 were excellent films. They were Fox, you know? All I can think is a strong director, somebody who is in control of the project, can... combat the power of Fox,
but,
you know?
But don't forget too that like Matthew Vaughn is a competent director. He's a good director.
He's a strong director.
But it's more just going to Matthew Vaughn,
but
off the back of Singer who was going to direct.
But
for
more
me,
importantly,
my level
though,
of
Ben, the one thing that you're not taking into account, the one thing you're not taking into account is Matthew Vaughn is a strong director.
Yeah.
But he's an even more powerful producer. This is the man who was a producer first. This is the man who managed to raise $40 million to make Kick-Ass privately without any studio intervention. This man has a lot of juice under the hood as a producer. He has a lot of contacts. This is somebody who can push Fox back. You know, this is somebody who's not going to be bullied by Fox because he's producing his own stuff.
But,
you know,
see, like, I'd still prefer...
And you don't think Matthew Vaughn? You don't think Matthew Vaughn didn't have a contract when he came into this, and they said we want you to direct?
He said,
"I'm in control. I have final cut."
I don't think Matthew Vaughn couldn't do it, but I'm kind of at the point now where I almost want them to fail because I want them to get back to Marvel so it can
the ulterior motive comes
out.
I mean?
No, that's part of it. Like if Matthew Vaughn could do it with Marvel, but the thing is, it's going to be the Fox thing again. Bryan Singer was a good director. If Matthew Vaughn does a great First Class movie, great. If he does a great sequel to that, great. What happens when he doesn't want to do the third one, and then they hire Michael Bay to do the third First Class film?
Then we get Victoria's Secret.
But then it happens all over again. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the same thing, because Fox, they milk a franchise till it dies, and then they go, let's reboot that
shit. And it's funny you say, we have a video we're showing in the after show, which kind of sums that up. So in the after show, we'll come back. We will come back to this topic.
We have a huge after show.
We do. We got a lot of things to talk about in the after show, so it's going to be good. In fact, I'm going to show a trailer right now. This is for those who watch this show regularly will know that a couple weeks ago we showed, in fact, I think it was the last time you were on.
I know, I'm thinking of leaving right now.
We showed the first trailer for Jonah Hex. Now, a second trailer has come out for Jonah Hex, and by all counts, everybody goes, and it looks better. Well, I've seen this trailer now, and I'm not convinced. All right, so let's see what you guys have to say about this. This is Chuck Norris of filmmaking? Who's Chuck Norris of filmmaking? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Chat room's ranting. All right, so this is Jonah Hex, trailer number 2. Okay, here we go.
Jonah Hex.
We've all heard the stories. You're special. Magic, even.
You're dead, friend. How can you speak to me? It's kind of a knack I picked up when I near died myself.
How many times you've been shot?
Seems like I'm luckier than most in that respect.
Given your well-told abilities at hunting and killing men,
the U.S. government needs your help.
Why don't you just say that to begin with? Anything new, Smith?
Thought you'd never ask. I take it that means you approve.
This war begins right here!
Still got that knife in your garter?
They took it all, Jonah.
They searched you for it darn good, didn't they?
Wouldn't you?
Kill him!
I'd like to see that. Can you shoot?
Can you?
Obviously.
Hey, Hex! What happened to your face?
Cut myself shaving. What happened to yours?
Is that all you got?
Let me show you.
Oh, dear. All right, so that was the second trailer. And I got to tell you, this one started better than the last one. And then as soon as the music changed and it kind of went into the stylized lettering, and it's like, no, you lost me.
Yeah. I have one.
What? Josh is just staring at me.
I have nothing to say about that. I have so little excitement for that.
I have Once Upon a Time in the West on DVD at home waiting to be watched to erase that film out of my brain.
All right, look, you know what? We've got another story, which is another comic book related story. Once again, we'll move it to the after show with the Spider-Man because we're running way late. We've got to get into our feature review. Our feature review this week is the Jerry Bruckheimer produced Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. I actually have a little...
It's interesting, though, you say that, Dave, that you think this is going to take a while. Like, my review for this
I don't think this will take a while, but we're already running over. No, this won't take very long. I think this may spark a conversation that leads into the after show, though, so we'll have to be careful that we don't go too far on this one. Directed by Mike Newell, who most people will know for things like Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Donnie Brasco.
And Donnie Brasco, not his territory. The film was written by... Now, I'm going to get this name wrong. I never understood how to pronounce this name. Is it Boaz Yakin? B-O-A-Z.
Oh, is this the Ubisoft guy?
No, this is the screenwriter. Boaz Yakin, whatever. And Doug Miro and Carlo Bernard, based on the video game series by Jordan Mechner. Film stars Jake Gyllenhaal, who, up until a few months ago, was one of our favorites. Gemma Arterton, Ben Kingsley, Alfred Molina, Steve Toussaint, Toby Kebbell, and Richard Coyle. And this is the official plot according to Walt Disney Pictures. And I got to tell you, I had to use this because it's so slim it actually doesn't actually highlight anything. So according to Walt Disney Pictures, this is the plot. Set in the mystical lands of Persia, a rogue prince and a mysterious princess race against dark forces to safeguard an ancient dagger capable of releasing the sands of time, a gift from the gods that can reverse time and allow its possessor to rule the world. Really? Slim?
I don't really actually think that was what the dagger did either.
No,
I'm sorry.
I'm pretty sure it did the opposite. It destroyed the world.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's kind of what happened. Kinda. You know, then, like, just quickly before we actually go into review, I want to actually point out to people that there is actually no explanation as to how he plans to rule the world when there's nothing there.
Well, exactly.
But that's the cliche thing of Whenever they're always doing those movies when the villain's like, I will use this thing and control
everyone.
Yes,
but they usually have like an escape room or something.
No, because he doesn't know that it... That's the thing. He apparently is this, you know, this guy who knows every detail of how these hidden sands of time work, except the point, the fact that it destroys the universe.
Well, I...
Conveniently, you know, the one important thing.
All right, hold on to that.
I have a question for you about that, but we'll wait.
Hold that thought for a minute. Let's have a look at the trailer for Prince of Persia to lead ourselves into this, and then we'll come in for our review. If you haven't seen Prince of Persia, I'm just going to say to you right now, and you are planning on seeing it, you might want to pause this podcast and come back to us, because I think we're probably going to be spoilers from the get-go.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because...
It's kind of hard not to.
Yeah, we're just going to dig straight into the guts of this thing. Yeah. So,
well,
if you haven't...
you want to just quickly...
Let's do a quick summary before the trailer. I actually thought it was... not the worst thing in the world. I've seen a lot worse. But it was okay. 10-year-olds will love it.
Absolutely.
If you've got a child and they want to go see it, by all means, take them. You won't be bored. It is... The action is nice. The visual effects work on the most part. You know, the cast are on the most part okay. The whole thing is just kind of, it's okay.
It's
coasting
along.
It's what Pirates of the Caribbean 2 and 3 are kind of like.
I reckon it's better than Pirates 2 and 3, but nowhere near as
good. Nowhere. It doesn't even come near Part 1.
No.
So, yeah, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, it was a good kids film. It was definitely very Disney. It works in some aspects. If you don't like Pirates of the Caribbean style, you know, sort of big budget, swashbuckling, huge amounts of action kind of movies, don't go see it. Otherwise,
and if you're not willing to disengage your brain, don't bother.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But if you are, it's a bit of fun. And after the 10 minutes of walking out of the cinema, I'd kind of accepted it for what it was and went, meh, all right, fine. Yeah. You know, my angers and pains were gone by the end of the film.
Yeah. Shane, what do you think?
M-E-H.
A man of few words. All right.
But effective ones.
Very effective.
He's a word sniper, remember?
And
Ben, established
sum it up.
Yeah, like fun, good, not great, and probably with the best game adaptation. Yeah,
cool.
That's all.
I'm trying to signal to you, but you're not watching. Closer to your microphone.
Oh, I thought you were signaling wrap it up.
No. This is wrap it up. Oh. This is get closer. All right.
I think
Dave's
coming on to me.
All right. So here's the trailer. When we come back, it'll be a spoiler open zone. So here we go. Prince of Persia.
This is no ordinary dagger. Releasing the sand turns back time. Only the holder of the dagger is aware of what's happened. Did you see that?
Prince Dastan, have you wondered how you could have found such a treasure? Are you not curious why an orphan from the streets would be chosen to become a prince? The gods have a plan for you. Destiny. There are those who would use the power of the dagger to destroy the world.
Time will erase everything.
You must protect it. Who were these demons?
Assassins, trained in the art of quick death.
The secret guardian temple. It's the one place the dagger can be safely hidden. Take it there, Dastan.
You really enjoy telling me what to do, don't you?
Only because you're so good at following orders.
Yeah, don't press your luck. The dagger must be found.
Such a noble prince. Eeping to assist the fallen beauty.
Who said you were a beauty?
There must be a reason why you can't take your eyes off me.
It's time.
Give me the dagger!
Come on.
How did you do that?
That's impossible.
Difficult, not impossible.
Okay. Now, we had some discussions going while that trailer was playing, so we'll see if we can try and reiterate some of that. We've already had in our chat room Northy say that it's that he's been told. I think it's Northy says it's one of the. What is it, where is it? Alf. He says Alfian says it was the best movie ever. Damn 10-year-olds, and so it had some good one-liners. Now, from the get-go, I said, you know, 10-year-olds will love this. It's okay. I think it made very clear at the moment that, and we're going to talk about this in the after show, but I'm having a problem at the moment with video game adaptations. I'm coming to a conclusion. It's a slow turnaround that I'm coming to a conclusion that video games don't actually make very good films, all right? We keep hoping for this, and I don't think it's coming, all right? Now, that being said, this is an above-average film. It's okay. You watch it. It's fun. It's popcorn fodder. Disengage brain when you go in. Don't think about it too hard. But there are moments in this film that are just laughable. It is also one of the worst cut films I've ever seen. Editing is atrocious in this film. And when we looked at the end credits, Michael Kahn was joined by two other top-notch editors. So it looks like they had problems. It looks like they were putting this thing together. Yeah. Okay, because scenes cut really abruptly. Action scenes aren't cut very well. There's a lot of optical slowdowns for dramatic effect. I hate post optical slowdowns. If you're not going to do it in slow motion in the first place, don't bother.
Is that the effect when he's free running a lot of the time? How it kind of, it's not full slow motion, but it looks like
when he lands in front of his uncle near the end, and it's that slow motion dramatic shot where he kind of said, and it looks kind of ghosted. It looks kind of jumpy.
Because not only that, the other reason it annoys me is it's like if you can't set your scene correctly to show the drama of that, then just don't bother because it's none of us are fooled by your.
All sorts of tricks you can do in post-production. One of the other ones is a digital zoom, which also you can always tell when they've done something in post because the picture quality degrades.
I'll say that the number one thing that this movie is doing is just solidifying my incredible hate for Hollywood directors doing fucking anything to do with either fighting, swashbuckling, or hand-to-hand combat with mid shots that don't actually show what's going on. It doesn't work. I actually
really miss. Can I just say it, that I was listening to a review on the Bourne Identity, the first Bourne film, and it was really interesting that an observation they made, which was that even though the film introduced us to that really kind of frenetic cutting and everything else, Michael Lyman is a really really good director, and it's very clear exactly what's going on. Even though it's really close up, even though it's really
that
snappy.
First time you ever see him do any real sort of damage. With the two cops.
Oh, the two cops, yeah.
The two cops. It's about two or 3 seconds long, and the reason they use the shot is because it's used for effect. It's used to actually solidify the fact that even he doesn't know what's going on.
That's right.
It's like, and it just happens. It worked.
And it worked. And you look at a lot of these films who are all trying to emulate that style, and because they don't really have a clear vision of what's going on, they shoot lots of close-ups, and in the editing they just chop it all up, and the idea is it creates this frenetic look. A film that really suffered from this was Eagle Eye.
One worse than that was actually Chronicles of Riddick. The fight scene at the end of that where no one has higher than a midriff, and these are supposed to be epic fighters.
Yeah.
And it just looks like they're beating each other on the side of the arm.
It ends up looking like just grappling.
Exactly.
You don't feel each blow.
I was about to say, with Eagle Eye, though, it's not just with fighting. With Eagle Eye, it was every action scene.
No.
They would cut so frenetically in the action scene, the car chases and everything, that you actually lost track of where people were. And what would happen is you'd see all this random movement, and then suddenly they'd drive out, and you go, oh, they weren't the car that just exploded 2 seconds ago, because now they're driving out, so that wasn't them, which I thought it was them, but things were moving fast.
You lose a direction in the
film.
That's
right, you lose your bearings.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I miss that clean filmmaking. I miss that idea that you actually plan it out.
Perfect example. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Absolutely.
Like, number one works so well with
one
the fight
shot
scene.
And you see each sword sort of strike.
Exactly.
I don't mind the
It doesn't have to be complicated.
Action. It just doesn't have to be that way all the time.
And it just doesn't have to be that complicated. Yeah. I don't need them to be fighting so incredibly fast and hardcore that things. I understand. Yes, he may be pretty good at fighting. The other guy's probably not. You know, I don't need the fights to be 10 minutes long and swashbuckling. I just need to know what's going on.
Look, a good example is if you go back and watch Watchmen again, right? Mm. That scene in the prison where they're coming down the hallway and everybody's running at them, Night Owl and Silk Spectre, and they take out everybody in that hallway is a fantastic scene.
Yeah.
It's brutal, it's fast, but you never lose track of what's going on. No. Every movement
feel the weight of every single
punch has weight behind it. Every movement feels calculated. Mm. Every shot feels well placed. Zack Snyder really shot that scene brilliantly well. We didn't need lots of frenetic cutting in the middle. Mm. It was very clean. Lots of wide shots. We could actually see what was going on, and it was still effective. Hit Girl. Going in at the end of Kick-Ass when she goes down that hallway with all those guys and all that activity, still very clear everything that's going on.
Yeah.
I think it's a lazy director or a director who doesn't know what they're doing, and this is where we come back to this film, who cannot figure out the action scene in advance.
Who was the fight cinematographer that's just... Matrix is another great
just
example.
Just one locked off, but let the speed come from the movement and the choreography rather than...
Because Mike Newell, who directed this, doesn't direct action films. Mm. He directs dramas and comedies, and yes, he had that one foray into Harry Potter world, and arguably my least favorite of the Harry Potter films.
Did he do the first one?
No, he did the fourth one. He did Goblet of Fire.
Oh, yeah, that was flat.
And it was flat, and I think he's a very good director when he directs what he does. And it's funny you say Hollywood director because he's actually English, right? And it's he's a very British director, and he.
I just mean the Hollywood style.
The Hollywood style, yeah. That's not... And I just get so sick of the fact. Now, this film has, with all that being said, this film has some really wonderful action stuff in it. The leaping and parkour inspired stuff.
And that's so awesome. They had different stunt coordinators for different things.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
because some of the parkour was cool.
Mm.
Some of it, though, that the bits when you have a long strand of movement where you could actually see Jake Gyllenhaal doing it. The bits, however, that lost me were when he'd do a leap and then it'd cut to a different shot and you'd just see a clearly digital leaping.
A couple of the ones that were really, exactly.
It's like you can't get a stunt guy to jump off a fucking building.
Well, the one at the start where it's got the kid going across the roof.
The whole thing.
And it's like he jumps at one stage over the roof, and this is terrible cutting again. It cuts one shot of him half leaping over, and it's very obvious that he doesn't make it to the ledge. It's like he's about halfway there. The ledge is here. There's only about... This he'd have to grab with his hands, and then the next shot, he's like 10 meters higher in the air and lands on the roof, and I'm like, what was that?
Like, I've been on YouTube and looked at parkour. There are people who can do that stuff for real.
All you have to do is watch the opening scene to Casino Royale.
Oh, exactly. Definitely.
That sequence is phenomenal.
That is amazing.
Watch the parkour film District B-13.
Oh, yes.
You know, and you'll see some real parkour stuff. Now, this is obviously faked parkour. He is on wires and stuff like that, but it's really well done on the most part. There's
and also, just every time a jump would come in, I'd kind of, you know... I'd be getting into it and then I'd kind of lose it a bit.
And there's some really
cool
moments.
It felt very
video
game-ish.
Well, exactly, but it's meant to. And the parts where they're really paying homage to the video game, where he does things like he stands on that ledge and then he does the backflip off.
The biggest one, and Prince of Persia fans will spot this immediately, is when they're going to attack, sort of right at the beginning, they're planning an attack in this city, and Jake Gyllenhaal says, okay, so here's the gate. And it does the whole thing where... The camera zooms through and then goes to the gate and says, now there's a lever up here. Like if you played Prince of Persia games, every time you enter a new area, the camera will then show you where you have to go,
where the
switch is to get there.
I also love the poles coming out of the walls. That was really great. Whenever he'd do the swinging and doing things like that, I was like,
Because I'm a huge fan of Assassin's Creed story. The gameplay, whatever, but the story. And the bits of Assassin's Creed's made by the same people who made Prince of Persia. Every time I saw a little Assassin's Creed type reference, I'd think, keep it out of this film.
It's funny that you bring that up, though, because I think me and Ben were both thinking at that scene where he stands on the edge of that ledge and holds the rope. I was thinking Assassin's Creed, because I'm just looking at him as he stands there, and it does
deliberate.
That pan around the
but
actual
as he,
shot.
As he jumps, background noise, eagle.
Yeah, I know.
It was entirely deliberate, and that really pissed me off, because that is not them going... What works in the film? What would this character do? That's them going, let's put in this reference from the video game. And that, I think, is what we'll probably talk about in the other show. But that's why game adaptations to film fail, because there's this pressure for them to try and put in homages to the game and things to make the the fans recognize it, rather than just going, okay, let's use this story and make our own goddamn film.
And this is the point we were talking about before the show, and I said the original Pirates of the Caribbean film, which I love dearly. I think the original Pirates of the Caribbean is fabulous. The reason that film worked is because Bruckheimer and company putting that film together basically said, we can't make a film of the game of the ride because the ride is literally just you sitting in a boat and you go through and you see some pirates. It's not going to work. So they completely they concocted the whole thing with the undead pirates and all this sort of stuff, created the Jack Sparrow character, who was a genius piece of, and then throughout the movie just put little nods to the ride. So the fact that it was pirates, the fact it was in the Caribbean, great. Then they would put things like the dog with the keys in his mouth, the pirates reaching through the cage trying to get the keys, the island of Tortuga. But other than that, the story was original. And that's why it works so well. And I think this is what they need to do with something like Prince of Persia. You take the concept, you take the design, and say, okay, now we've got that. Let's completely go away from it and do something else with it.
They did kind of do that for Prince of Persia, though. I mean, I'd say the only bits that were the same as the game were the first, like, say, if you got the first, like, 10, 15 minutes of Prince of Persia movie, and then cut that in, combined it with the last half an hour, that's pretty much, like, the first hour of the game. It's almost like they tried to squeeze more out of the game, so as in, you know, a sequel could be...
I found myself enjoying it most when there was lots of leaping and jumping and fighting and stuff like that.
I found the second half...
As soon as they start talking to each other, I found myself just going...
The only character, really? And I know that everyone's going to disagree with me, but I just thought he was having the time of his life playing the role
that really stood out for me.
It was Alfred Molina. Yeah. That man, like, admittedly, some of his dialogue fell a little flat, but he was memorable. He was memorable because he was having fun.
Once again, it's one of those, taking a seasoned professional and just throwing him in there and saying, just knock yourself out.
But you know what? If I was in the editing room with them in that film, I would have gone the ostrich racing scene. Unnecessary. That whole...
Yeah, but it also establishes his character.
It was cruising along.
And ostrich racing is a real thing. So, you know...
Yeah, no, but I mean, don't you feel like, in terms of the pacing...
Out of
for
all
me,
the stuff I would have cut out of that film.
It started kind of... It started... I was with it for the beginning because, you know, it kind of... It created this personal... I kind of like the setup of Jake Gyllenhaal as the youngest brother who's not really part of the family, and there's the power tussle going on, and I kind of like those dynamics being set up. And then kind of what happens very early on, you know, where he's sort of framed for killing the king and he's on the run. He's just sort of wandering in the desert in the run for like 40 minutes and nothing happens and they go to an ostrich
and you've got
thing,
all the interchanges between him and her, which was torturous at all.
Like they were trying to do a kind of Han Solo, you know, Princess Leia type dynamic. Oh, you're such a brute. You're just a princess. And it's like, but it was so half-hearted and weak.
But then again, like, they would break character all the time where she would run out and fight someone, even though she's apparently this, princess
chick. That's because Jerry Bruckheimer loves using empowered women, which is when you just have a prissy bitch but let her fight someone with a big stick for 30 seconds. That's what you do. That's
the Bruckheimer definition of empowerment.
Yeah, it's, we're beat her with a phallic weapon. Yeah. All right, anyway, moving right along from that. The scene that I really wanted to talk about, and probably the bit that actually did affect the film for me, was the last 5 to 10 minutes that I thought was just so shoddily put together.
I agree.
Especially the ridiculously insulting nature of how the two of them reconnect, where it's just like, well, look, we're real sorry. We kind of invaded your city. That was probably our bad. You know what would really fix things, though? I know you're still theoretically in charge here, but how about you marry this dude you don't know? And, everything will be good. Let's do that.
Oh, and by the way, I have your stolen deck.
Yeah, look, yeah. I'll even give you back this thing I stole 30 minutes ago.
No. See, let's be more specific. I'm just going to give you this dagger back that I killed one of your best soldiers and closest friends to give.
After letting everyone into your
city. Again, I'm real sorry about that.
but marry him anyway.
Yeah.
So we're not worrying about spoilers here, are we?
No,
we're in spoilers.
And this will sound like I'm taking a piss, but I mean it seriously. When the bit in the end that I liked the best was when she died. Not just because I hate Gemma Arterton, but because I thought, then, you know what, actually, this could be cool for an ending of the film. If it goes the route that the games went, which is the second one, he's a lot darker and more hard-edged. And the first game starts with him being very arrogant and very punsy sort of royalty. And then he kind of, throughout them all, he gets more rugged. And I thought, you know what, that could be a kind of a cool ending.
Yeah.
she dies, and I mean, I didn't care about film. I didn't care about her at all up until that point. But the moment she died, she was suddenly useful to me because she was something that he liked, and she was gone, so he suddenly had loss. And yeah, so she was important to give him.
The problem was though that I would never have had that feeling because I would never have believed that they would end the film with that.
Yeah,
ever.
Well, no, not only that, also the fact that I just didn't believe the connection between those two. Like, I just wasn't feeling anything towards her. I like him. I just felt she was annoying.
I just thought she was nice to look at. If it wasn't, well,
I don't even think that though. Yeah. I think it. She has the face of like a badly made blow up sex doll.
Her face
doesn't change every shot you see her, and she has no, and her voice is just the same. Well, Prince Dastan, I am incapable of showing any form of human emotion beyond that of a chilly ice bitch.
Now, the other like thing I just, we're gonna have to bring this to an end, because, which is a shame. We can continue this in the after show, maybe. Yeah. But the point is that one last thing I want to bring up on this, and we got to give Shane a chance. He said, "Med, do you have anything else to say on this, Shane?"
Yeah, the one thing that annoyed me about everything would have to be, why does everybody in Persia speak English?
Yeah.
I can forgive that. That was actually, I mean, it's an American film, so they have to speak English to start with. And
I mean, with an English accent.
Mike Newell made that decision. He actually says that. In an interview I read with him, he actually said he didn't want a mishmash of accents, which often happens in
like
these sort of films.
Like Clash of the Titans.
Like Clash of the Titans.
Dude, or even better, Enemy at the Gates.
Yeah, there
Russian
you go.
Russian-speaking every language under the sun.
So he made a conscious choice that he said everybody in the film had to have one universal accent, and he chose English.
I'm going to say that.
Considering that 90% of the cast were English, it makes sense that that's what you
Fine. I just want to raise one other point, which is what was with the incredible orange paint job on Ben Kingsley. He looks like a fucking
I love his eyeshadow.
He literally did. He looked bright orange.
I never found him scary at all. You know, no. The bad guy.
Because no, he was bright orange with badger black eyes.
Don't you think he has just something about his face and his eyes? I just kept thinking, I want to chill out with that guy. Kick back, have a hookah.
Can I just ask, do you mean ever, or do you mean just in that film? Because have you seen Sexy Beast?
No, I've seen Sexy Beast. Yeah. I mean specifically in that
film. Okay, cool.
I think because he's got kind of like, he's got like very sort of amused eyes. Every time you look at his eyes, he looks like he's amused by something. Like the fact that he had eyeliner,
I think he nailed on the head. I think he was amused by the fact that he was
looking at his
movie.
Career. It's because behind the camera in every shot, someone's holding up a contract that he's in the background,
they're just wheeling buckets of money to
his house. He's amused. He's going, I'm in this film, I was in Blood Rain, and yet they still hire me.
When I was tired, they just subbed in an eggplant with my face painted on
an orange painted,
and no one knows the difference.
All right, the other thing I was going to say was the thing that really annoyed me, and then we got to close this up. We're approaching the 2-hour mark. The thing that really annoyed me was the fact that they make a big deal about the fact that you stab this dagger into the sands of time, and if it's activated, basically everything is laid waste. You can't stop it. The world comes to an end. You know, blah blah blah. What they're doing. So they stab it in. They activate it. The world is coming to an end. You see the huge clouds of sand come in. He pulls the knife out, and it all goes backwards.
Yeah.
No. Even better. He just closes the cap.
He closes the cap, and basically you see the sands just reverse footage. Then you see the reverse footage. You see the sandstorm move back away from the city, and it's like, okay, gods are happy now. It's like, what? You just completely went against everything you said was going to happen. And I love the fact that he managed to close the cap to put himself precisely the point in time which would be perfectly suited to fix everything.
Which wasn't deliberate, because then when he comes to, he's like, what? What am I doing?
Why am I here?
I don't know what's
going
on.
But he happened to end up exactly at that. Boy, that's timing plus. I mean, I tell you, if time travel could be that accurate,
Doctor Who wouldn't need a TARDIS.
That's right.
What the game did better at the end of that for me was he does this kind of the same thing where he goes back in time, like, you know, she dies, or the much cooler female counterpart in the game dies, and it's all down to him and the vizier, and he puts the thing in the, and they go back to the time, and then he ends up fighting the vizier, who somehow knows he's gone back in time as well. And then the princess is like, who are you? What are you doing here? Because she obviously hasn't met him. And then he just kind of says a knowing, like, oh, don't worry, and makes a reference that he couldn't possibly know.
Off.
And then jumps off the balcony, and she's like, who is he? And then he kind of disappears. Yeah. And it's good. It doesn't marry her, because, like, why would you want to spend a life with that woman?
And now, also,
I'm sorry, I'm down with
no,
that.
No, because as we said in Clash of the Titans, she is his personal sex doll. As you said, you pointed out perfectly.
No, because she'd be all sort of sulky during it. She'd be going, "Yeah, you're such a bitch. What are you doing?" Yeah, no. Unless she had a gag.
Now, the other person in the cast I couldn't take seriously, and we'll wrap up on this, was, of course, the other brother.
Toby Kebbell?
Who was played by the guy from Rock and Roller.
Yeah.
Because all I had going Kebbell. Through my head, every time he opened his mouth was, "Careful, Arch, I'm only little." Yeah. You know,
I don't know why you'd cast him as who's meant to be the tough.
I know.
The tough brother. He was even in his costume, he looked like a child playing dress up. So it just didn't work.
I liked him. I loved him in Rock and Roll.
He was such a force in that film.
Yeah.
He was just the absolute essence of chaos.
what was the other brother? Was that Richard Coyle, that guy?
God, who cares?
I know. I just was wondering where I'd seen him from. I didn't know.
I found the casting of both of his brothers absolutely boring. I thought, you know, you look at these people and you go, I don't care about either. And they weren't compelling characters, so you didn't feel anything for them. I thought, you know, the lead bad guy, the lead assassin, was kind of like a Ray Liotta wannabe.
I know.
In the trailer, I thought it was Ray Liotta.
The Namibian guy who throws knives, who lived up to the film tradition of all characters who spend a whole film not talking. It's usually because they can't act for shit.
Yeah, and what is with, as Josh pointed out when we came out, what was with the Western moment at the end with the shootout at the OK Corral?
Did you notice that during that the tension in that scene, in those instances, you cared more about that character than you did about like 80% of the rest of the cast?
Absolutely. He was the only character.
Don't die, random black guy who doesn't talk, who I don't even know.
He was so much cooler than any of the other people.
All right, let's wrap this up. All right, we've already said our thoughts. Look, it's not, we're making fun of it, and that's the problem.
The reason why
it is not a great film is the fact that we can pick holes in it like this, like crazy.
Yeah.
It is okay. If it's not your bag, it's not a must-see film.
I'd say if you're a fan of the game, see it just for fun, because you won't. Like,
look, and I actually got to approach this film from somebody who hadn't played the game. Look, I played the original platformer years and years and years ago. I haven't played it since then. So for me, I wasn't carrying the baggage of, you know, did they get Prince of Persia right? I look at it from the point of view of, I can see there's, for me, what it felt like, and whether this is right or not is not the issue, but what it felt like was, because they're pandering to fanboys, the film is suffering.
Yeah,
you know, and that is what happens with 90% of, or actually probably 100% of these video game adaptations, because they have to appease the fans of the game. The film is suffering, and we'll talk more about that in the after show.
And the annoying thing there is that they didn't even try to appease the fans story wise. They kind of did their own thing story wise. And then, but thought they'll appease the fans if we have a few slow mo shots of him looking like the video game character.
That's right. Yeah. Those are the issues I had with it. But I think
Does anyone else remember that? Like, I remember the first shots of him being completely topless.
He's fighting. It's cliche.
What happened
city
there? Because again, we come back to that fact that there's a huge amount of cutting in this.
Yeah.
I really think that's the case.
There's one bit particularly where I was horrendous. Where they're at the waterhole, and then Alfred Molina and co. catch up with them.
Mm.
And he says, the bounty on your head's quite high. We're going to take you. Next shot, it's like Jake Gyllenhaal and the chick. It doesn't show them being restrained. I think they are, but it doesn't show that. Just sleeping peacefully at a campfire. And it's like...
No, the cutting like that was
what is the process between that?
It was a really, really rough cutting. Look, if you've got kids and they want to see it, you can do a lot worse at the moment. You know, it's okay. It's nothing special, but it's all right. The kids will like it. It really is for 10-year-olds. It really is for 10, 11-year-olds.
I think if it wasn't for us seeing Brothers like a month or so ago, I would I really enjoyed Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, all of a sudden, there's two films when I really liked Jake Gyllenhaal.
And I actually still liked him in this, too.
Yeah,
I think he actually has a lot of...
I want to see him as a leading man in other better films.
The man has a lot of charisma, and he's a nice... He comes across as a nice person on screen, and you get that nice feeling when you're watching him.
And he
that's
can handle himself in the action scene.
Yeah,
as well,
absolutely.
Which is great.
I can actually see him going on and doing more action. I just wish this wasn't the first one that he got to do his action man stuff in. You know.
Well, anyway, we'll see where it goes from here.
We'll see where it goes. We're really gonna have to cut this short because we're actually over the 2 hour mark now. Very, very quickly, we do go out live with this show. If you want to come and watch all this video and stuff that we do while we're doing it, you can log into geekactually.com/live 12 p.m. ish. We started pretty much on time today, about 15 minutes late. 12 p.m. ish Saturdays, Australian Eastern Standard Time. We do follow with an after show. Now, we've got a few topics for our after show today. We've been gathering them up throughout this episode. The after show goes out on the feed on Wednesday, or if you're in our chat room, you get to watch it right now. Okay, but the audio of the after show will go out on Wednesday, so keep an eye out for that because we've got a few interesting topics to talk about. A couple of really quick plug outs to our friends. Real Junkies Podcast, Tequila Fueled Reviews. Rob's in our chat room right now. In fact, yeah, he's still there. Rob's in our chat room right now. We're going to get the Real Junkies guys onto this show at some point. We just got to try and coordinate time. Love to get them on. You can find their podcast on iTunes. All you have to do is search for it or go to weekendronan.com. I actually have that address for the visual people watching. There you go. And we also have our other podcast another podcast we like to promote. Now, they have changed their name since I did the slide. I still object to the name change, but anyway, they call themselves the Movie Fan Cast now. You can find them at moviefanhouse.com or, once again, search for them on iTunes. By fans, for fans. A lot of fun, except I'm very disappointed Brad's left. So we also have our other podcast, which goes out on Mondays, live, 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, which is Platforms.
Yeah.
Josh, what's the game this week?
This week we are going to get a little bit brutal and...
opposed to the last review?
No, when I mean a little bit brutal, I mean the game itself. We will be reviewing UFC, which we've had an extensive playthrough over the last few days at a media event, and we also have copies of the game, which we will be testing. Dave will, of course, be continuing his love for the game. I will be playing the game to see whether or not it has combated the problem I had with last year's game, which is I sucked at it. And there was no visual way of teaching me that could seem to make me any better at the game. So we will be thrashing that out, and we have a couple of interesting news stories saved up as well.
Fantastic. So. And if you want to read more news of the stuff that goes into the Platforms podcast, you can go to DLC or rawdlc.com or DLC Live. This is Josh and Dave and Nacho Justice, who have basically set up this website to companion their podcast.
Yep.
And this is where you'll find a lot of the new stuff that's going on.
Yes.
Do shoot over there and have a look at that. Now, where can people catch up with you guys on the web, starting with you, Ben?
Okay, you can go to studio4.org.au or the Studio 4 fan page on Facebook, which is New South Wales Uni Comedy Society, and we put on shows, open mic nights, things like that, sketch shows to get involved in. Cheap comedy to see if you're in the area, that is Kensington Eastern Suburbs, or get involved in stand-up if it's something you've wanted to do.
Fantastic.
And I got a play that I've written that's going to be on in about August, which I will provide dates for when it's available.
Plug it next
Bang.
Time.
There we go.
Shane, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Shane Robert Gregory, or I also write for rawdlc.com.
Fantastic. Josh, we know where to find you. No, where can we find you, Josh?
In a gutter.
Raw DLC.
In a gutter. No.
Let me guess. RawDLC.com.
RawDLC.com and, of course, doing articles and my reviews up at Geek Actually as well. We just had one posted up, and I have another one coming over the next couple of days as well. For Geek Actually.
Fantastic.
Did I say Geek
and
Actually?
Any
sure
showing of any Twilight film, Josh will be in the background yelling something.
I will be in the background throwing things at teenage girls.
By the way, when
themselves.
The next Twilight movie comes out, we are covering it on this show.
Oh, I know.
The reason we are covering it is because Celine
yeah,
has
Celine's
specifically
in that week.
Requested to do the next Twilight
she
film.
Is
she
is
fallen on the
about
she
getting
is
on that
fallen
show.
On the sword for that one.
Yeah, so she really wants to
that
okay.
on metal.
You, if you agree or disagree with anything that we have spoken about on this show, or you have comments or suggestions for this show, you can leave a voicemail at Sydney number 02-8011-3167 or email feedback@geekactually.com. You can also find me at twitter.com/DavidMcVeigh and maybe maybe Facebook after. Well, you can find me on Facebook until tomorrow evening at least. I don't know.
Are we going ahead with the Facebook and forum thing? Are we going to try and get people to revive the David McVeigh account? Are we going to do
that?
Well,
you could do that. Look, if you want, as I said at the beginning of the show, if you think, whatever your thoughts are on this, send me an email that says jump or stay for Facebook. If you don't know what I'm talking about, if you guys came in late into this show, go back and listen to the beginning of this show. We went all over it. Mm. All right. I think that's it. I think we're done. I don't think we have anything else. Except for the official, unofficial Geek Actually movie fan club. Next week is going to see the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street. Mm-hmm. All details for sessions and so forth will be found in our forum. So go to our forum.
Because it's not at our usual place.
And it's not in Facebook anymore.
I totally have something related to that to say in the after show.
All right, we'll come back to the after show. In the meantime, guys, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will talk to you more next week. We'll be right back.